cries as they fought, as well as the occasional sound of some piece of broken furniture. I yearned to turn around and see what was going on, but I couldn't. I took the chair and swung again, breaking the other half of the window. There was now a huge hole, perfect for me to get out of.
Rose!
Dimitri's voice triggered some instinctive response in me. I glanced back and saw him still grappling with Galina. They were both exhausted, but it was clear he was getting the worst of it. But in their fighting, he kept trying to restrain her in a way that exposed her chest to me. His eyes met mine. Back when he'd been a Dompier, we'd rarely needed words to convey our thoughts. This was one of those times. I knew what he wanted me to do. He wanted me to stake her. I knew I shouldn't. I needed to hop out of that window right now. I needed to let them keep fighting, even though it seemed obvious Galina was about to win. And yet, despite my misgivings, some force drew me across the room, stake poised and ready. Maybe it was because I would never fully lose my pull to Dimitri, no matter what kind of monster he'd become. Maybe it was an unconscious sense of duty, since I knew he'd just saved my life. Or maybe it was because I knew one Strigoi was going to die tonight, and she was the more dangerous. But she wasn't easy to get a hold of. She was fast and strong, and he was having a hard time with her. She kept wriggling around, trying to renew her attack. All she'd need to do was incapacitate him as I had. Then it just required decapitation or burning to finish him off. I had no doubt she could arrange either. He managed to turn her slightly, giving me the best view of her chest I'd had. I moved forward, and then Dimitri slammed into me. I was addled for a moment, wondering why he'd attack me after saving me, until I realized he'd been pushed by Nathan. Nathan had just entered the library, along with Marlin. It distracted Dimitri, but not me. I still had the opening he'd given me on Galina, and I plunged my stake into her chest. It didn't go in as deeply as I would have liked, and she still managed to fight me, bucking hard. I grimaced and pushed forward, knowing the silver had to be affecting her. A moment later, I saw the pain twist her face. She faltered, and I pushed my advantage, shoving the stake in all the way. It took several seconds, but she eventually stopped moving, her body crumpling to the ground. If the other Strigoi noticed her death, they didn't pay attention. Nathan and Marlin were fixated on Dimitri. Another Strigoi, a female I didn't recognize, soon joined the face-off. I jerked my stake out of Galina and slowly began backing toward the window, hoping I wouldn't attract too much attention. My heart went out to Dimitri. He was outnumbered. I could possibly lend my strength and help him fight. Of course, my strength was fading. I was still suffering from days of vampire bites and blood loss. I'd fought two Strigoi tonight and killed a powerful one. That had been my good deed, removing her from the world. The next best thing I could do would be to leave and let these Strigoi finish off Dimitri. The surviving ones would be leaderless and less of a threat. Dimitri would be free of this evil state, his soul finally able to move on to better places. And I would live, hopefully, having helped the world by killing more Strigoi. I bumped against the windowsill and looked out. Nighttime. Not good. The sheer side of the manor was not ideal for climbing either. It could be done, but it would be time-consuming. I didn't have any more time. Directly below the window was a thickly leafed bush of some sort. I couldn't see it clearly, and only hoped it wasn't a rose bush or something equally sharp. A second floor drop wouldn't kill me, though. Probably wouldn't even hurt. Much. I climbed over the ledge, briefly meeting Dimitri's gaze as the other Strigoi moved in on him. The words came to me again. Don't hesitate. Dimitri's important lesson. But it hadn't been his first one. His first had been about what to do if I was outnumbered and out of options. Run! Time for me to run. I leapt out the window. Chapter 26. I think the profanities that came out of my mouth when I hit the ground would have been understandable in any language. It hurt. The bush was not particularly sharp or pointy, but it wasn't soft by any stretch of the imagination. It broke my fall somewhat, though it didn't save my ankle from twisting underneath me. Shit, I said through gritted teeth, climbing to my feet. Russia sure was making me swear a lot. I tested the weight on my ankle and felt a twinge of pain, but nothing I couldn't stand on. A sprain. thank God. The ankle wasn't broken, and I'd had worse. Still, it was going to slow down my getaway. I limped away from the bush, trying to pick up the pace and ignore the pain. Stretching before me was that stupid hedge maze I'd thought was so cool the other night. The sky was cloudy, but I doubted moonlight would have made it easier to navigate. No way was I going to fight that leafy mess. I'd find where it ended and get out through there. Unfortunately, when I circled the house, I discovered an unhappy truth. The hedge was everywhere. It encircled the estate like some kind of medieval moat. The annoying part was, I doubted Galena had even had it installed for defense. She'd probably done it for the same reason she had crystal chandeliers and antique paintings in the hallways. It was cool. Well, there was nothing for it then. I picked an opening to the maze at random and started winding my way through. I had no idea where to go, no strategies for getting out. Shadows lurked everywhere, and I often didn't see dead ends coming until I was right on top of them. The bushes were tall enough that once I was only a little way into the maze, I completely lost sight of the top of the house. If I'd had it as a navigation point, I might have been able to just move in a straight, or nearly straight, line away. Instead, I wasn't entirely sure if I was going backward, or in circles, or what. At one point, I was pretty sure I'd passed the same jasmine trellis 3 times. I tried to think of stories I'd read about people navigating mazes. What did they use? Breadcrumbs? Thread? I didn't know, and as more time passed and my ankle grew sore, I began to get discouraged. I'd killed a Strigoi in my weakened state, but couldn't escape some bushes. Embarrassing, really. Rosa! The voice carried distantly on the wind, and I stiffened. No, it couldn't be. Dimitri, he'd survived.
Rosa, I know you're out there, he called. I can smell you.
I had a feeling he was bluffing. He wasn't close enough for me to feel sick, and with the cloying perfume of the flowers, I doubted he could scent me yet, even if I was sweating a lot. He was trying to bait me into giving up my location. With new resolve, I headed down to the next twist in the bushes, praying for the exit. Okay, God, I thought. Get me out of this, and I'll stop my half-assed church-going ways. You got me past a pack of Strigoi tonight. I mean, trapping that one between the doors really shouldn't have worked. So clearly you're on board. Let me get out of here, and donate Adrian's money to the poor, get baptized, join a convent. Well, no, not that last one. Dimitri continued his taunting.
I won't kill you, not if you give yourself up. I owe you. You took out Galena for me, and now I'm in charge. Replacing her happened a little ahead of schedule, but that's not the problem. Of course, there aren't many people to control now that Nathan and the others are dead, but that can be fixed.
Unbelievable. He truly had survived those odds. I'd said it before and meant it. Alive or undead, the love of my life was a badass. There was no way he could have defeated those three. And yet, well, I'd seen him take on crazy odds before. And clearly his being here was proof of his capabilities. The path ahead of me split, and I randomly chose the right-hand path. It spread off into the darkness, and I breathed a sigh of relief. Score. Despite his breezy commentary, I knew he was also moving through the maze, getting closer and closer. And unlike me, he knew the paths and how to get out of it.
I'm not upset about you attacking me either. I would have done it in your place. It's just one more reason why we should be together.
My next turn took me into a dead end filled with climbing moonflowers. I kept my swearing to myself and backtracked.
You're still dangerous, though. If I find you, I'm probably going to have to kill you. I don't want to, but I'm starting to think there's no way we can both live in this world. Come to me by choice, and I'll awaken you. We'll control Galena's empire together.
I almost laughed. I couldn't have found him if I wanted to in this mess. If I'd had that kind of ability, I'd... My stomach swirled a little. Oh no, he was getting closer. Did he know it yet? I didn't fully understand how the amount of nausea correlated to distance, but it didn't matter. He was too close. Period. How close did he need to be to truly smell me? To hear me walking on the grass? Each second brought him closer to success. Once he had my trail, I was screwed. My heart started racing even more. if that was even possible at this point, and the adrenaline pumping through me numbed my ankle, even though it still slowed me down. Another dead end spun me around, and I tried to calm myself, knowing panic would make me sloppy. All the while, that nausea grew in increments.
"Even if you get out, where will you go?" he called. "We're in the middle of nowhere."
His words were poison, seeping into my skin. If I focused on them, my fear would win, and I'd give up. I'd curl into a ball and let him come for me, and I had no reason to believe he'd let me live. My life could be over in the next few minutes. A turn to my left led me to another wall of glossy green leaves. I sidestepped it quickly and headed in the opposite direction and saw fields. Long, vast stretches of grass spread out ahead of me, giving way to trees scattered off in the distance. Against all odds, I'd made it out. Unfortunately, the nausea was strong now. This close, he had to know where I was. I peered around, realizing the truth of his words. We really were in the middle of nowhere. Where could I go? I had no idea where we were. There, to my left, I saw the faint purple glow on the horizon that I'd noticed the other night. I hadn't realized what it was then, but now I knew. Those were city lights, most likely Novosibirsk. If that was where Galina's gang did most of their deeds, even if it wasn't Novosibirsk, it was civilization. There would be people there. Safety. I could get help. I took off at as fast a run as I could manage, feet pounding hard against the ground. Even the adrenaline couldn't block that much impact out, and pain crackled up through my leg with each step. The ankle held, though. I didn't fall or go to a true limp. My breath was hard and ragged, the rest of my muscles still weak from all I'd been through. Even with a goal, I knew that the city was miles away. And all the while, the nausea grew and grew. Dimitri was close. He had to be out of the maze now, but I couldn't risk looking back. I just kept running toward that purple glow on the horizon, even though it meant I was about to enter a cluster of trees. Maybe it would provide cover. "You're a fool," some part of me whispered. "There's nowhere you can hide from him." I reached the thin line of trees and slowed just a little, gasping for breath and pressing myself up against a sturdy trunk. I finally dared to look behind me, but saw nothing. The house glowed in the distance, surrounded by the darkness of the hedge maze. My sick stomach hadn't grown worse, so it was possible I might have a lead on him. The maze had several exits. He hadn't known where I'd come out. My moment of respite over, I kept moving, keeping the soft glow of the city lights in sight through the branches. It was only a matter of time before Dimitri found me. My ankle wasn't going to let me do much more of this. Outrunning him was slowly becoming a fantasy. Leaves left over from last fall crunched as I moved, but I couldn't afford to step around them. I doubted I had to worry any more about Dimitri sniffing me out. The noise would give me away.
"Rose, I swear it's not too late."
"Shoot." His voice was close. I looked around frantically. I couldn't see him, but if he was still calling for me, he likely couldn't see me yet either. The city haze was still my guiding star, but there were trees and darkness between me and it. Suddenly, an unexpected person came to mind. Tasha Ozera. She was Christian's aunt, a very formidable lady who was one of the forerunners of teaching Moroi to fight back against Dragoi.
"We can retreat and retreat and let ourselves get backed into corners forever," she'd said once. "Or we can go out and meet the enemy at the time and place we choose, not them."
"Okay, Tasha," I thought. "Let's see if your advice gets me killed." I looked around and located a tree with branches I could reach. Shoving my stake back into my pocket, I grabbed hold of the lowest branch and swung myself up. My ankle complained the whole way, but aside from that, there were enough branches for me to get good hand and footholds. I kept going until I found a thick, heavy limb that I thought would support my weight. I moved out onto it, staying near the trunk and carefully testing the limb's sturdiness. It held. I took the stake out of my pocket and waited. A minute or so later, I heard the faint stirring of leaves as Dimitri approached. He was much quieter than I had been. His tall, dark form came into view, a sinister shadow in the night. He moved very slowly, very carefully, eyes roving everywhere, and the rest of his senses no doubt working as well.
"Rosa," he spoke softly. I know you're here. You have no chance of running. No chance of hiding.
His gaze was fixed low. He thought I was hiding behind a tree or crouched down. A few more steps. That was all I needed from him.
Against the stake, my hand began to sweat, but I couldn't wipe it off. I was frozen, holding so still that I didn't even dare breathe.
Rosa.
The voice caressed my skin, cold and deadly. Still scrutinizing his surroundings, Dimitri took one step forward, then another, and then another.
I think it occurred to him to look up the instant I jumped. My body slammed into his, knocking him to the ground back first. He immediately tried to throw me off, just as I tried to drive the stake through his heart. Signs of fatigue and fighting were all over him. Defeating the other Strigoi had taken its toll, though I doubted I was in much better shape. We grappled, and once, I managed to rake the stake against his cheek. He snarled in pain, but kept his chest well protected. Over it, I could see where I'd ripped his shirt the first time I'd staked him. The wound had already healed.
You are amazing, he said, his words full of both pride and battle fury.
I had no energy for a response. My only goal was his heart. I fought to stay on him, and at last, my stake pierced his chest, but he was too fast. He knocked my hand away before I could fully drive the stake through. In the process, he knocked me off of him. I flew several feet away, mercifully not hitting any trees. I scrambled to my feet, dazed, and saw him coming toward me. He was fast, but not as fast as he'd been in previous fights. We were going to kill ourselves in trying to kill each other. I'd lost my advantage now, so I ran off into the trees, knowing he'd be right behind me. I was certain he could outrun me, but if I could accrue just a tiny lead, then maybe I could secure another good attack place and try to... Ah! My scream rang into the night, jarring against the quiet darkness. My foot had gone out from under me, and I was sliding rapidly down a steep hillside, unable to stop myself. There were few trees, but the rocks and my ungainly position made the fall painful, particularly since I was wearing that sweater dress. How I managed to keep holding the stake was beyond me. I hit the bottom roughly, managed to briefly stand, and then promptly stumbled and fell into water. I stared around. On cue, the moon peeked out from the clouds, casting enough light to show me a huge expanse of black, fast-moving water in front of me. I gaped at it, utterly confused, and then I turned in the direction of the city. This was the Ob, the river that ran through Novosibirsk. The river headed right toward it. Glancing behind me, I saw Dimitri standing on top of the ridge. Unlike some of us, he'd apparently been watching where he was going. Either that, or my scream had tipped him off that something was amiss. It was going to take him less than a minute to come running down after me, though. I looked to either side of me, and then in front. Okay, fast-moving water, possibly deep, very wide. It'd take the pressure off my ankle, but I wasn't thrilled about my chances of not drowning. In legends, vampires couldn't cross running water. Man, I wished. That was pure myth. I did a double take to my left, and just barely saw a dark shape over the water. A bridge? It was the best shot I had. I hesitated before going toward it. I needed Dimitri to start coming down here. I was not going to run off and let him pace me up above on the ridge. I needed the time his hill descent would buy me. There, he took one step onto the slope, and I tore off down the shore, not looking back. The bridge grew closer and closer to me, and as it did, I realized just how high it was. I'd misjudged it from where I'd landed. The slopes around the bridge reached farther up the more I ran downriver. I was going to have a hell of a climb. No problem. I'd worry about that later. By which I meant in about 30 seconds, since that was probably how long it'd take Dimitri to catch up with me. As it was, I could hear his feet splashing through the shallow water on the bank, the sounds growing nearer and nearer. If I could just reach the bridge, if I could just get to high ground and to the other side. The nausea surged in me. A hand closed around the back of my jacket, jerking me backward. I fell against Dimitri and immediately began fighting him, trying to free myself. But God, I was so tired.
Every piece of me hurt, and no matter how weary he was, I was worse.
"Stop it!" he yelled, gripping my arms. "Don't you get it? You can't win."
"Then kill me!" I wriggled, but his hold on my upper arms was too strong, and even holding the stake, I couldn't do anything with it.
"You said you would if I didn't surrender myself. Well, guess what? I didn't. I won't. So just get it over with."
That phantom moonlight lit up his face, eradicating the normal shadows and making his skin stark white against the night's backdrop. It was like all the colors in the world had been blanked out. His eyes merely looked dark, but in my mind's eye, they glowed like fire. His expression was cold and calculating. "Not my Dimitri."
"It'd take a lot for me to kill you, Rose," he said. "This isn't enough."
I wasn't convinced. Still holding on to me with that unbreakable grip, he leaned toward me. He was going to bite me. Those teeth would pierce my skin, and he'd turn me into a monster like him, or drink until I was dead. Either way, I'd be too drugged and too stupid to know it. The person who was Rose Hathaway would leave this world without even realizing it. Pure panic shot through me, even as that part of me that was still in withdrawal cried out for more of those glorious endorphins. No. No. I couldn't allow that. Every nerve I had was set on fire, ramping up for defense, attack, anything. Anything to stop this. I would not be turned. I could not be turned. I wanted so badly to do something to save myself. My whole being was consumed with that urge. I could feel it ready to burst out. Ready to... My hands could touch each other, but not Dimitri. With a bit of maneuvering, I used the fingers of my left hand to pry off Oksana's ring. It slipped off and into the mud, just as Dimitri's fangs touched my skin. It was like a nuclear explosion going off. The ghosts and spirits I'd summoned on the road to Baia burst between us. They were all around, translucent and luminescent in shades of pale green, blue, yellow, and silver. I'd let loose all of my defenses, let myself succumb to my emotions in a way I hadn't been able to when Dimitri first caught me. The ring's healing power had barely kept me in check just now, but it was gone. I had no barriers on my power. Dimitri sprang back, wide-eyed, like the Strigoi on the road. He waved his hands around, swatting the spirits as one would mosquitoes. His hands passed right through them, ineffectual. Their attack was more or less ineffectual, too. They couldn't physically hurt him, but they could affect the mind, and they were damn distracting. What had Mark said? The dead hate the undead. And from the way these ghosts swarmed Dimitri, it was clear that they did. I stepped back, scanning the ground below me. There, the ring's silver gleamed up at me from a puddle. I reached down and grabbed it, then ran off and left Dimitri to his fate. He wasn't exactly screaming, but he was making some horrible noises. That tore at me, but I kept going, running toward the bridge. I reached it a minute or so later. It was as high as I'd feared, but it was sturdy and well-built, if narrow. It was the kind of country bridge that only one car at a time could cross. "I've come this far," I muttered, staring up at the bank. It was not only higher than the one I'd fallen down, it was also steeper. I pocketed the ring and stake and then reached out, digging my hands into the ground. I was going to half-crawl, half-climb this one. My ankle got a slight reprieve. This was all upper body strength now. As I climbed, however, I began to notice something. Faint flashes in my periphery. An impression of faces and skulls. And a throbbing pain in the back of my head. Oh no. This had happened before, too. In this panicked state, I couldn't maintain the defenses I usually did to keep the dead away from myself. They were now approaching me, more curious than belligerent. But as their numbers grew, it all became as disorienting as what Dimitri was now experiencing. They couldn't hurt me, but they were freaking me out, and the telltale headache that came with them was starting to make me dizzy. Glancing back toward him, I saw something amazing. Dimitri was still coming. He really was a god. A god who brought death closer with each footstep. The ghost still swarmed him like a cloud, yet he was managing progress, one agonizing step at a time. Turning back, I continued my climb, ignoring my own glowing companions as best I could. At long last, I reached the top of the bank and stumbled onto the bridge, I could barely stand. My muscles were so weak. I made it a few more steps, and then collapsed to my hands and knees. More and more spirits were spinning around, and my head was on the verge of exploding. Dimitri still made his slow progress, but was a ways from the bank yet. I tried to stand again, using the bridge's rails for support, and failed. The rough grating on the bridge scraped my bare legs. Damn! I knew what I had to do to save myself, though it could very well end up killing me too. With trembling hands, I reached into my pocket and pulled out the ring. I shook so badly that I felt certain I'd drop it. Somehow, I held on and managed to slide it onto my finger. A small surge of warmth radiated from it into me, and I felt a tiny bit of control settle into my body. Unfortunately, the ghosts were still there. The traces of that fear of dying or turning Strigoi were still in me, but it had lessened now that I was out of immediate danger. Feeling less unstable, I sought for the barriers and control I usually kept up, desperate to slam them into place and drive my visitors away. "Go, go, go," I whispered, squeezing my eyes shut. The effort was like pushing on a mountain, an impossible obstacle that no one could have the strength for. This was what Mark had warned about, why I shouldn't do this. The dead were a powerful asset, but once called, they were difficult to get rid of. What had he said? Those who danced on the edge of darkness and insanity shouldn't risk this. "Go!" I shouted, throwing my last bit of strength into the effort. One by one, the phantoms around me vanished. I felt my world settle back into its rightful order. Only when I looked down, I saw that the ghosts had left Dimitri too, as I'd suspected. And just like that, he was on the move again. Damn! My word of the night. I managed to get on my feet this time as he sprinted up the slope. Again, he was slower than usual, but still more than fast enough. I began backing up, never taking my eyes off of him. Getting rid of the ghosts had given me more strength, but not what I needed to get away. Dimitri had won.
"Another shadow-kissed effect?"
he asked, stepping onto the bridge.
"Yeah,"
I swallowed.
"Turns out ghosts don't much like Strigoi."
"You didn't seem to like them much either."
I took another slow step backward. Where could I go? As soon as I turned around to run, he'd be on me.
"So did I go far enough for you to not want to turn me?"
I asked as cheerfully as I could manage. He gave me a wry, twisted smile.
"No, your shadow-kissed abilities have their uses. Too bad they'll go away when you're awakened."
So, that was still his plan. In spite of how much I'd infuriated him, he still wanted to keep me around for eternity.
"You're not going to awaken me," I said.
"Rose, there's no way you can..."
"No!"
I climbed up onto the railing of the bridge, swinging one leg over. I knew what had to happen now. He froze.
"What are you doing?"
"I told you, I'll die before I become Strigoi. I won't be like you or the others. I don't want that. You didn't want that once upon a time."
My face felt cold as a night breeze blew over it, the result of stealthy tears on my cheeks. I swung my other leg over and peered down at the swiftly moving water. We were a lot more than two stories up. I'd hit the water hard, and even if I survived that fall, I didn't have the strength to outswim the current and get to shore. As I stared down, contemplating my death, I thought back to when Dimitri and I sat in the back of an SUV once, discussing this very topic. It was the first time we'd sat near each other, and every place our bodies touched had been warm and wonderful. He'd smelled good. That scent of being alive was gone now, I realized. And he'd been more relaxed than usual, ready to smile. We talked about what it meant to be alive and in full control of your soul, and what it meant to become one of the undead, to lose the love and light of life and all those you'd known. We looked at each other and agreed death was better than that fate. Looking at Dimitri now, I had to agree.
"Rose, don't!"
I heard true panic in his voice. If he lost me over the edge, I was gone. No Strigoi, no awakening. For me to be turned, he needed to kill me by drinking my blood and then feed blood back to me. If I jumped, the water would kill me, not bloodletting. I would be long dead before he found me in the river.
"Please,"
he begged,
There was a plaintive note to his voice, one that startled me. It twisted my heart. It reminded me too much of the living Dimitri, the one who wasn't a monster, the one who'd cared for me and loved me, who'd believed in me and made love to me. This Dimitri, the one who was none of those things, took two careful steps forward, then stopped again.
"We need to be together."
"Why?" I asked softly. The word was carried away on the wind, but he heard.
"Because I want you."
I gave him a sad smile, wondering if we'd meet again in the land of the dead. "Wrong answer," I told him. I let go. And he was right there, sprinting out to me with that insane Strigoi speed as I started to fall. He reached out and caught one of my arms, dragging me back onto the railing. Well, half-dragging. Only part of me made it over. The rest still hung out over the river.
"Stop fighting me,"
he said, trying to pull on the arm he held. He was in a precarious position himself, straddling the rail as he tried to lean over far enough to get me and actually hold on to me.
"Let go of me,"
I yelled back. But he was too strong and managed to haul most of me over the rail, enough so that I wasn't in total danger of falling again. See, here's the thing. In that moment before I let go, I really had been contemplating my death. I'd come to terms with it and accepted it. I also, however, had known Dimitri might do something exactly like this. He was just that fast and that good. That was why I was holding my stake in the hand that was dangling free. I looked him in the eye. "I will always love you." Then I plunged the stake into his chest. It wasn't as precise a blow as I would have liked, not with the skilled way he was dodging. I struggled to get the stake in deep enough to his heart, unsure if I could do it from this angle. Then, his struggle stopped. His eyes stared at me, stunned, and his lips parted, almost into a smile, albeit a grisly and pained one.
"That's what I was supposed to say,"
he gasped out. Those were his last words. His failed attempt to dodge the stake had made him lose his balance on the edge. The stake's magic made the rest easy, stunning him and his reflexes. Dimitri fell. He nearly took me with him, and I just barely managed to break free of him and cling to the railing. He dropped down into the darkness. Down, down into the blackness of the obe. A moment later, he disappeared from sight. I stared down after him, wondering if I would see him in the water if I squinted hard enough. But I didn't. The river was too dark and too far away. Clouds moved back over the moon, and darkness fell over everything again. For a moment, staring down and realizing what I'd just done, I wanted to throw myself in after him, because surely there was no way I could go on living now. "You have to." My inner voice was much calmer and more confident than it should have been. The old Dimitri would want you to live. If you really loved him, then you have to go on. With a shaking breath, I climbed over the rail and stood back on the bridge, surprisingly grateful for its security. I didn't know how I would go on living, but I knew that I wanted to. I wasn't going to feel fully safe until I was on solid ground, and with my body falling apart, I began to cross the bridge one step at a time. When I was on the other side, I had a choice. Follow the river or the road. They veered off from each other slightly, but both headed roughly in the direction of the city's lights. I opted for the road. I didn't want to be anywhere near the river. I would not think about what had just happened. I couldn't think about it. My brain refused. Worry about staying alive first. Then worry about how you're going to live. The road, while clearly rural, was flat and packed and made for easy walking. For anyone else. A light rain began falling, which just added insult to injury. I kept wanting to sit and rest, to curl up in a ball and think of nothing else. No. 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 The light. I had to go toward the light. That almost made me laugh out loud. It was funny, really, like I was someone having a near-death experience. Then I did laugh. This whole night had been full of near-death experiences. This was the least of them. It was also the last,
and as much as I longed for the city, it was too far away. I'm not sure how long I walked before I finally had to stop and sit. Just a minute, I decided. I'd rest for a minute and then keep moving. I had to keep moving. If by some crazy chance I'd missed his heart, Dmitri could be climbing out of the river at any moment. Or other surviving Strigoi could be coming after me from the manor. But I didn't get up in a minute. I think I may have slept, and I honestly don't know how long I'd been sitting there when headlights suddenly spurred me to alertness. A car slowed down and came to a stop. I managed to get to my feet, bracing myself. No Strigoi got out. Instead, an old human man did. He peered at me and said something in Russian. I shook my head and backed up a step. He leaned into the car and said something, and a moment later, an older woman joined him. She looked at me, and her eyes widened, face compassionate. She said something gentle-sounding and held out her hand to me, cautious in the way one would be when approaching a feral animal. I stared at her for several heavy seconds, and then pointed at the purple horizon. Novosibirsk? I said. She followed my gesture and nodded.
Novosibirsk.
She pointed to me, and then to the car.
Novosibirsk.
I hesitated a little longer, and then let her lead me into the back seat. She took off her coat and laid it over me, and I noticed then that I was soaked from the rain. I had to be a mess after everything I'd been through tonight. It was a wonder they'd even stopped. The old man began driving again, and it occurred to me I could have just gotten in a car with serial killers. But then, how would that be any different from the rest of my night? The mental and physical pain were starting to drag me under, and with my last effort, I wet my lips and choked out another gem from my Russian vocabulary.
Pozvanit?
The woman looked back at me in surprise. I wasn't sure if I had the word right. I might have just asked for a payphone instead of a cell phone. Or maybe I'd asked for a giraffe, but hopefully the message came through regardless. A moment later, she reached into her purse and handed me a cell phone. Even in Siberia, everyone was wired. With shaking hands, I dialed the number I now had memorized. A female voice answered.
Allô?
Sydney? This is Rose. Chapter 27. I didn't recognize the guy Sydney sent to meet us when we reached Novosibirsk, but he had the same golden tattoo that she did. He was sandy-haired and in his 30s, and human, of course. He looked competent and trustworthy, and as I leaned against the car, he laughed and spoke to the elderly couple like they'd been best friends forever. There was a professional and reassuring air about him, and soon they were smiling too. I'm not sure what he told them, maybe that I was his wayward daughter or something, but they apparently felt good enough to leave me in his hands. I supposed with their jobs, the alchemist's charm in action. When the old man and woman drove off, his demeanor shifted slightly. He didn't seem as cold as Sydney initially had, but there was no laughing or joking with me. He'd become distinctly businesslike, and I couldn't help but think of the stories of Men in Black, the people who cleaned up after extraterrestrial encounters in order to keep the world ignorant of the truth.
"Can you walk?"
he asked, eyeing me up and down. "Unclear at this time," I replied. It turned out I could, just not very well. With his help, I eventually ended up at a townhouse over in a residential part of the city. I was bleary-eyed and barely able to stay on my feet by that point. There were other people there, but none of them registered. The only thing that mattered was the bedroom someone took me to. I mustered enough strength at that point to break free of the arm supporting me and do a faceplant right in the middle of the bed. I fell asleep instantly. I awoke to bright sunshine filling my room and voices speaking in hushed tones. Considering everything that I'd been through, I wouldn't have been surprised to see Dmitri, Tatiana, or even Dr. Olensky from the academy there. Instead, it was Abe's bearded face that looked down at me, the light making all of his jewelry gleam. For a moment, his face blurred, and all I saw was dark, dark water, water that threatened to wash me away. Dmitri's last words echoed in my head. That's what I was supposed to say. He'd understood that I wanted to hear that he loved me, What would have happened if we'd had a few moments more? Would he have said those words? Would he have meant them? And would it have mattered? With the same resolve I'd mustered before, I parted the water swirling in my mind, ordering myself to push aside last night as long as I could. I would drown if I thought about it. Now, I had to swim. Abe's face came back into focus.
"Greetings, Zmei," I said weakly. Somehow, him being here didn't surprise me.
Sydney would have had to tell her superiors about me, who in turn would have told Abe.
"Nice of you to slither on in."
He shook his head, wearing a rueful smile.
"I think you've outdone me when it comes to sneaking around dark corners. I thought you were on your way back to Montana."
"Next time, make sure you write a few more details into your bargains. Or just pack me up and send me back to the U.S. for real."
"Oh," he said, "that's exactly what I intend to do."
He kept smiling as he said it, but somehow I had a feeling he wasn't joking. And suddenly, I no longer feared that fate. Going home was starting to sound good. Mark and Oksana walked over to stand beside him. Their presence was unexpected, but welcome. They smiled, too, faces melancholy, but relieved. I sat up in bed, surprised I could move at all.
"You healed me," I said to Oksana. "I still hurt, but I don't feel like I'm going to die, which I have to think is an improvement."
She nodded.
"I did enough to make sure you weren't in immediate danger. I figured I could do the rest when you woke up."
I shook my head.
No, I'll recover on my own."
I always hated it when Lyssa healed me. I didn't want her wasting the strength on me. I also didn't want her inviting spirit side effects.
"Lyssa."
I jerked the covers off of me. "Oh my God, I have to get home, right now." Immediately, three pairs of arms blocked my way.
"Hold on," said Mark. "You aren't going anywhere. Oksana only healed you a little. You're a long way from being recovered."
"And you still haven't told us what happened," said Abe,
eyes as shrewd as ever. He was someone who needed to know everything, and the mysteries around me probably drove him crazy.
"There's no time! Lyssa's in trouble! I have to get back to school!"
It was all coming back to me. Lyssa's erratic behavior and crazy stunts, driven by some kind of compulsion, or super compulsion, I supposed, seeing as Avery had been able to shove me out of Lyssa's head.
"Oh, now you want to go back to Montana," exclaimed Abe.
"Rose, even if there was a plane waiting for you in the other room, that's a 20-hour trip at minimum, and you're in no condition to go anywhere."
I shook my head, still trying to get on my feet. After what I'd faced last night, this group wasn't that much of a threat. Well, maybe Mark was, but I could hardly start throwing punches. And yeah, I still wasn't sure what Abe could do.
"You don't get it. Someone's trying to kill Lyssa, or hurt her, or..."
Well, I didn't really understand what Avery wanted. All I knew was that Avery had somehow been compelling Lyssa to do all sorts of reckless things. She had to be amazingly strong in spirit to not only manage those feats but also keep it hidden from Lyssa and Adrian. She'd even created a false aura to hide her golden one. I had no idea how that magnitude of power was possible, particularly considering that Avery's fun-loving personality could hardly be called insane. Whatever her scheme, Lyssa was at risk. I had to do something. Removing Abe from the equation, I looked up at Mark and Oksana pleadingly.
"It's my bondmate," I explained. "She's in trouble. Someone's trying to hurt her. I have to go to her. You understand why I have to?"
And I saw in their faces that they did understand. I also knew that in my situation, they'd try exactly the same thing for each other. Mark sighed.
"Gross. We'll help you get to her, but we can't do it now."
"We'll contact the school,"
said Abe, matter-of-factly.
"They'll take care of it."
Right. And how exactly would we do that? Call up Headmaster Lazar and tell him his party girl daughter was actually corrupting and controlling people with psychic powers and that she needed to be locked up for Lyssa's and everyone else's good? My lack of an answer seemed to make them think they'd convinced me, Abe in particular.
"With Oksana's help, you'd probably be in good enough condition to leave tomorrow,"
he added.
I can book a morning flight the next day.
Will she be all right until then? Oksana asked me gently.
I don't know. What could Avery do in 2 days' time? Alienate and embarrass Lissa further? Horrible things, but not permanent or life-threatening. Surely she'd be okay that long, right?
Let me see.
I saw Mark's eyes widen slightly as he realized what I was about to do. Then, I saw nothing in the room anymore because I was no longer there. I was in Lissa's head. A new set of sights settled in around me, and for half a second, I thought I stood on the bridge again and was looking down into black waters and a cold death. Then I gained a grip on what I saw, or rather, what Lissa saw. She was standing on the ledge of a window in some building on campus. It was nighttime. I couldn't tell offhand which building it was, but it didn't matter. Lissa was on what appeared to be the sixth floor, standing there in high heels laughing about something while the dark ground threatened below. Behind her, I heard Avery's voice.
Lissa, be careful! You shouldn't be up there!
But it had the same double meaning that permeated everything Avery did. Even as she said those words of caution, I could feel a reckless drive within Lissa. Something telling her that it was okay to be where she was and not to worry so much. It was Avery's compulsion. Then, I felt that brushing of my mind and the annoyed voice. You again? I was forced back out, back to the bedroom in Novosibirsk. Abe was freaking out, apparently thinking I'd gone into some catatonic fit, and Mark and Oksana were attempting to explain to him what had happened. I blinked and rubbed my head as I gathered myself, and Mark breathed a sigh of relief.
It's much stranger watching someone do that than it is doing it myself.
She's in trouble, I said, attempting to get up again. She's in trouble, and I don't know what to do.
They were right in saying there was no way on earth I could get to Lissa anytime soon. And even if I followed Abe's suggestion and contacted the school, I didn't know for sure where Lissa was at, or even if anyone there would believe me. I thought about jumping back in and trying to read Lissa's location from her mind, but Avery would likely throw me out again. From what I had briefly felt, Lissa didn't have her cell phone on her. No surprise. There were strict rules about having them in classes, so she usually left hers in her dorm room. But I knew someone who would have his, and who would believe me.
Does anyone have a phone? I asked.
Abe gave me his, and I dialed Adrian's number, surprised I had it memorized. Adrian was mad at me, but he cared about Lissa. He would help her, no matter his grudge toward me. And he would believe me when I tried to explain a crazy spirit-induced plot. But when the other end of the line picked up, it was his voicemail that answered, not the man himself.
I know how devastated you must be to miss me, his cheery voice said. But leave a message and I'll try to ease your agony as soon as possible.
I disconnected, feeling lost. Suddenly, I looked up at Oksana as one of my crazier ideas came to mind.
You can do that thing where you actively go in someone's mind and touch their thoughts, right? Like you did to me?
She grimaced slightly.
Yes, but it's not something I like to do. I don't think it's right.
Can you compel them once you're in there?
She looked even more disgusted.
Well, yes, of course. The two things are actually very similar. But reaching in someone's mind is one thing, and forcing them into some unwanted behavior is an entirely different matter.
My friend is about to do something dangerous, I said. It could kill her. She's being compelled, but I can't do anything about it. The bond won't let me actively reach her. I can only watch. If you could reach inside my friend's head and compel her out of danger.
Oksana shook her head.
Supposing morals weren't an issue, I can't reach into someone who's not actually here, let alone someone I've never met.
I raked a hand through my hair, panic setting in. I wished Oksana knew how to walk dreams. That would at least give her the long-distance capability. All of these spirit powers seemed to be one-off from each other, each having some additional nuance. Someone who could dream walk might be able to take the next step and visit someone awake. An even crazier idea came to me. This was a groundbreaking day.
Oksana, you can reach into my mind, right?
Yes,
she reaffirmed.
If I was in my bondmate's head at the time,
Could you reach into me and then reach into her mind? Could I, like, be the link between you guys?
I've never heard of anything like that, murmured Mark.
That's because we've never had this many spirit users and shadow-kissed around before, I pointed out. Abe, understandably, looked completely lost. A shadow fell over Oksana's face.
I don't know.
Either it works or it doesn't, I said. If it doesn't, then there's no harm done. But if you can reach her through me, you can compel her. She started to speak and I cut her off.
I know, you think it's wrong, but this other spirit user, she's the one who's wrong. All you have to do is compel Lissa out of danger. She's ready to jump out a window. Stop her now, then I'll get to her in another day or so and fix things.
And by fix things, I meant ruin Avery's pretty face with a black eye. In my bizarre life, I'd grown pretty used to people, especially adults, rejecting my outlandish ideas and proclamations. I'd had a hell of a time convincing people that Victor had kidnapped Lissa, and an equally hard time making the guardians believe the school was under attack. So when situations like this happened, part of me almost expected resistance. But the thing was, as stable as they were, Oksana and Mark had been fighting with spirit for most of their lives. Crazy was kind of par for the course for them, and after a moment, she didn't argue any further.
All right, she said. Give me your hands.
What's going on?
Asked Abe, still totally clueless. I took a small amount of satisfaction in seeing him out of his league for a change. Mark murmured something to Oksana in Russian and kissed her on the cheek. He was warning her to be careful, not condemning her for her choice. I knew he'd want the same thing if she were in Lissa's place. The love that flashed between them was so deep and so strong that I nearly lost my resolve to do this. That kind of love reminded me of Dmitri, and if I allowed myself to think about him for even a moment more, I was going to relive last night. I clasped Oksana's hands, a knot of fear coiling in my stomach. I didn't like the idea of someone being in my head, even though that was a hypocritical sentiment for someone who was constantly traveling into her best friend's mind. Oksana gave me a small smile, though it was obvious she was as nervous as me.
I'm sorry, she said. I hate doing this to people.
And then I felt it. The same thing that had happened when Avery pushed me out. It was like the actual physical sensation of someone touching my brain. I gasped, looking into Oksana's eyes as waves of heat and cold ran through me. Oksana was in my head.
Now go to your friend, she said.
I did. I focused my thoughts into Lissa and found her still standing on the window's ledge. Better she was there than on the ground, but I still wanted her off and back in the room before something bad happened. That wasn't for me to do, however. I was the taxi, so to speak. Oksana was the one who had to literally talk Lissa off the ledge. Only I had no indication the other woman had come with me. When I jumped to Lissa's mind, I'd lost that sense of Oksana. No more tickling of the mind. Oksana? I thought. Are you there? There was no response. Not from Oksana, at least. The answer came from a very unexpected source. Rose? It was Lissa's voice that spoke in my mind. She froze her position in the window and abruptly cut off whatever she'd been laughing about with Avery. I felt Lissa's terror and confusion as she wondered if she was imagining me. She peered around the room, her eyes passing over Avery. Avery recognized something was going on, and her face hardened. I felt the familiar sense of her presence in Lissa's mind and wasn't surprised when Avery tried to shove me out again. Except, it didn't work. Avery kicking me out in the past had always felt like an actual shove. I got the impression that when she tried it now, it felt like hitting a brick wall to her. I wasn't so easy to push around anymore. Oksana was with me somehow, lending her strength. Avery was still in Lissa's line of sight, and I saw those adorable blue-gray eyes go wide with shock that she couldn't control me. Oh, I thought. It's on, bitch.
Rose?
Lissa's voice was there again.
Am I going crazy?
Not yet, but you have to get down, right now. I think Avery's trying to kill you.
Kill me?
I could feel and hear Lissa's incredulity.
She'd never do that.
Look,
Let's not argue it for now. Just get out of the window and call it good. I felt the impulse in Lissa, felt her shift and start to put one foot down. Then it was like some core part of her self-stopped her. Her foot stayed where it was, and slowly began to grow unsteady. That was Avery at work. I wondered if Oksana, lurking in the background of this bond, could overpower that compulsion. No, Oksana wasn't active here. Her spirit powers had somehow gotten me into actively communicating with Lissa, but she was remaining passive. I'd expected to be the bridge and thought Oksana would jump to Lissa's mind and compel her. The situation was reversed, though, and I didn't actually have compulsion powers. All I had was legendary wit and powers of persuasion. "Lissa, you have to fight Avery," I said. "She's a spirit user, and she's compelling you. You're one of the strongest compulsion users I know. You should be able to fight her." Fear answered me.
I can't compel right now.
Why not?
Because I've been drinking.
I mentally groaned. Of course. That was why Avery was always so quick to supply Lissa with alcohol. It numbed spirit, as demonstrated in Adrian's frequent indulgences. Avery had encouraged the drinking so that Lissa's spirit abilities would weaken and give her less resistance. There were a number of times Lissa hadn't been able to gauge exactly how much Avery was drinking. In retrospect, Avery must have been doing a fair amount of faking. "Then use ordinary willpower," I told her. "It's possible to resist compulsion." It was true. Compulsion wasn't an automatic ticket to world domination. Some people were better at resisting it than others, though a Strigoi or spirit user certainly complicated matters. I felt Lissa build up her resolve, felt her repeat my words over and over, that she had to be strong and step back off the ledge. She worked to push away that impulse Avery had implanted, and without knowing how, I suddenly found myself pushing on it as well. Lissa and I joined our strength together and started shoving Avery out. In the physical world, Avery and Lissa's gazes were locked as the psychic struggle continued. Avery's face showed hard concentration that suddenly became overlaid with shock. She'd noticed me fighting her too. Her eyes narrowed, and when she spoke, it was me she addressed and not Lissa. "Oh," Avery hissed, "you do not want to mess with me." Didn't I? There was a rush of heat and that feeling of someone reaching into my mind. Only it wasn't Oksana. It was Avery, and she was doing some serious investigation of my thoughts and memories. I understood now what Oksana meant about it being invasive and a violation. It wasn't just looking through someone's eyes. It was spying on their most intimate thoughts. And then, the world around me dissolved. I stood in a room I didn't recognize. For a moment, I thought I was back in Galena's estate. It certainly had that rich, expensive feel to it. But no. After a moment's examination, I realized this wasn't the same at all. The furnishings were different. Even the vibe was different. Galena's home had been beautiful, but there had been a cold, impersonal feel to it. This place was inviting and clearly well-loved. The plush couch had a quilt thrown haphazardly in its corner, as though someone, or maybe two someones, had been cuddling underneath it. And while the room wasn't messy, exactly, there were scattered objects, books, framed photos, that indicated this room was actually used and wasn't just for show. I walked over to a small bookshelf and picked up one of the framed photos. I nearly dropped it when I saw what it was. It was a picture of Dimitri and me, but I had no memory of it. We stood arm in arm, leaning our faces together to make sure we both got in the shot. I was grinning broadly, and he too wore a joyous smile, one I'd hardly ever seen on him. It softened some of the protective fierceness that usually filled his features and made him look sexier than I'd ever imagined. A piece of that soft brown hair had slipped his ponytail and lay on his cheek. Beyond us was a city that I immediately recognized, St. Petersburg. I frowned. No, this was definitely a picture that couldn't exist. I was still studying it when I heard someone walk into the room. When I saw who it was, my heart stopped. I set the photo back on the shelf with shaking hands and took a few steps back. It was Dimitri. He wore jeans and a casual red t-shirt that fit the lean muscles of his body perfectly. His hair was down loose and slightly damp, like he'd just gotten out of the shower. He held two mugs and chuckled when he saw me.
"Still not dressed?"
he asked, shaking his head.
"They're going to be here any minute."
I looked down and saw that I wore plaid flannel pajama bottoms and a tank top. He handed me the mug, and I was too stunned to do anything but take it. I peered into it, hot chocolate, and then looked up at him. There was no red in his eyes, no evil on his face, only gorgeous warmth and affection. He was my Dimitri, the one who'd loved and protected me, the one with a pure heart and soul.
Who's coming?
I asked.
Lisa and Christian, they're coming for brunch.
He gave me a puzzled look.
Are you okay?
I looked around, again taking in the comforting room. Through a window, I saw a backyard filled with trees and flowers. Sunshine spilled through onto the carpet. I turned back to him and shook my head.
What is this? Where are we?
His confused expression now turned into a frown. Stepping forward, he took my mug and set his and mine on the shelf. His hands rested on my hips, and I flinched but didn't break away. How could I when he looked so much like my Dimitri?
"This is our house," he said, drawing me near. "In Pennsylvania."
"Pennsylvania? Are we at the royal court?" He shrugged.
"A few miles away."
I slowly shook my head. "No, that's not possible. We can't have a home together, and definitely not so close to the others. They'd never let us. If in some crazy world Dimitri and I lived together, we'd have to do it in secret, somewhere remote, like Siberia."
"You insisted," he said with a small smile. "And none of them care. They accept it. Besides, you said we had to live near Lissa."
My mind reeled. What was going on? How was this possible? How could I be living with Dimitri, especially so near Maroi? This wasn't right. And yet, it felt right. Looking around, I could see how this was my home. I could feel the love in it, feel the connection Dimitri and I had to it. But how could I actually be with Dimitri? Wasn't I supposed to be doing something else? Wasn't I supposed to be somewhere else?
"You're Strigoi," I said at last.
"No, you're dead. I killed you." He ran a finger along my cheek, still giving me that rueful smile.
"Do I look like I'm dead? Do I look Strigoi?"
"No. He looked wonderful, and sexy, and strong. He was all the things I remembered, all the things I loved." "But you were." I trailed off, still confused. This wasn't right. There was something I had to do, but I still couldn't remember. "What happened?" His hand returned to my hip, and he pulled me into a tight embrace.
"You saved me," he murmured into my ear. "Your love saved me, Rosa. You brought me back so that we could be together."
Had I? I had no memory of that either. But this all seemed so real, and it felt so wonderful. I'd missed his arms around me. He'd held me as a Strigoi, but it had never felt like this. And when he leaned down and kissed me, I knew for sure he wasn't a Strigoi. I didn't know how I could have ever deluded myself back at Galena's. This kiss was alive. It burned within my soul, and as my lips pressed more eagerly into his, I felt that connection, the one that told me there was no one else in the world for me except him. Only, I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't supposed to be here. But where was I supposed to be? Lissa. Something with Lissa. I broke the kiss, but not the embrace. My head rested against his chest. "I really saved you?"
"Your love was too strong. Our love was too strong. Not even the undead could keep us apart."
I wanted to believe it, desperately, but that voice still nagged in my head. Lissa. What about Lissa? Then it came to me. Lyssa and Avery. I had to save Lyssa from Avery. I jerked away from Dimitri, and he stared in surprise.
What are you doing?
This isn't real, I said. This is a trick. You're still Strigoi. We can't be together. Not here. Not among the Moroi.
Of course we can.
There was hurt in his deep brown eyes, and it tore at my heart.
Don't you want to be with me?
I have to go back to Lyssa.
Let her go,
he said, approaching me again.
Let all of it go. Stay here with me. We can have everything we ever wanted, Rose. We can be together every day. Wake up together every morning.
No. I stepped further back. I knew if I didn't, he would kiss me again, and then I'd truly be lost. Lyssa needed me. Lyssa was trapped. With each passing second, the details about Avery were coming back to me. This was all an illusion.
Rose,
he asked. There was so much pain in his voice.
What are you doing?
I'm sorry, I said, feeling on the verge of tears. Lyssa, I had to get to Lyssa.
This isn't real. You're gone. You and I can never be together. But I can still help her.
You love her more than me?
Lyssa had asked me almost the same thing when I'd left to hunt Dimitri. My life was doomed to always be about choosing between them.
I love you both, I replied.
And with that, I used all of my will to push myself back to Lyssa, wherever she was, and tear away from this fantasy. Honestly, I could have spent the rest of my days in that make-believe world, being with Dimitri in that house, waking up with him each morning like he'd said. But it wasn't real. It was too easy. And if I was learning anything, it was that life wasn't easy. The effort was excruciating, but suddenly, I found myself looking back at the room at St. Vladimir's. I focused on Avery, who was staring me and Lyssa down. She'd pulled out the memory that tormented me most, attempting to confuse me and tear me from Lyssa with a fantasy of what I wanted more than anything else in the world. I'd fought Avery's mind trap and felt pretty smug about it, despite the ache in my heart. I wished I could communicate directly with her and make a few comments about what I thought of her and her game. That was out of the question, so instead, I threw my will in with Lyssa's once more, and together, we stepped down off the ledge and onto the room's floor. Avery was visibly sweating, and when she realized she'd lost the psychic tug of war, her pretty face turned very ugly.
Fine, she said. There are easier ways of killing you off.
Reed suddenly entered the room, looking as hostile as ever. I had no idea where he'd come from or how he'd known to show up right then, but he headed straight toward Lyssa, hands reaching out. That open window loomed behind her, and it didn't take a genius to guess his intentions. Avery had tried to get Lyssa to jump by using compulsion. Reed was just going to push her. A mental conversation flew between Lyssa and me in the space of a heartbeat. Okay, I told her. Here's the situation. We're going to have to do a little role reversal.
What are you talking about?
Fear flooded her, which was understandable, seeing as Reed's hands were seconds away from grabbing her. Well, I said, I just did the psychic power struggle, which means you've got to do the fighting, and I'm going to show you how. Chapter 28 Lyssa didn't have to say anything to express her shock. The feelings of utter astonishment pouring into me said more than any words could have. I, however, had one important word for her. Duck! I think it was her surprise that made her respond so quickly. She dropped to the floor. The movement was clumsy, but it removed her body from Reed's direct attack and put her mostly out of range of the window. He still collided with her shoulder and the side of her head, but it only bumped her and caused a little pain. Of course, a little pain meant totally different things to us. Lyssa had been tortured a couple of times, but most of her battles were mental. She'd never been in a one-on-one physical confrontation. Getting thrown against walls was an average occurrence for me, but for her, a small swipe to the head was monumental. Crawl away, I ordered. Get away from him and the window. Head for the door if possible. Lyssa started moving on her hands and feet, but she was too slow. Reed caught hold of her hair. I kind of felt like we were playing a game of telephone.
With the delay in me giving direction and her figuring out how to respond, I might as well have been passing the message through 5 people before it got to her. I wished I could control her body like a puppeteer, but I was no spirit user. It's going to hurt, but turn around as best you can and hit him. Oh, it did hurt. Trying to turn her body meant his hold on her hair tugged that much more painfully. She managed it reasonably well, though, and flailed out at Reed. Her hits weren't that coordinated, but they surprised him enough that he let go of her hair and tried to fend her off. That's when I noticed he wasn't overly coordinated either. He was stronger than her, true, but he obviously had no combat training short of basic hits and throwing his weight around. He'd come to just push her out the window and be done with it. Get away if you can. Get away if you can. She scrambled across the floor, but unfortunately, her escape path didn't give her access to the door. Instead, she backed further into the room until her back hit a rolling desk chair. Grab it. Hit him with it. Easier said than done. He was right there, still trying to grab her and jerk her to her feet. She caught hold of the chair and tried to roll it into him. I'd wanted her to pick it up and hit him with it, but that wasn't quite so easy for her. She did, however, manage to get to her feet and get the chair between them. I directed her to keep hitting him with it in an effort to get him to retreat. It worked a little, but she didn't quite have the force to truly damage him. Meanwhile, I half expected Avery to join in the fight. It wouldn't have taken much effort to assist Reed in subduing Lyssa. Instead, out of the corner of Lyssa's eye, I saw Avery sitting perfectly still, her eyes unfocused and slightly glazed over. Okay, that was weird, but I had no complaints about her being out of the conflict. As it was, Lyssa and Reed were in a stalemate, one I had to get her out of. You're on the defensive, I said. You need to take the attack to him. I finally got a direct answer back.
What? I can't do anything like that. I have no clue how.
I'll show you. Kick him, preferably between the legs. That'll take down most guys. Without words, I tried to send the feelings into her, teaching her the right way to tense muscles and strike out. Steeling herself, she pushed the chair away so that there was nothing between her and Reed. It caught him by surprise, giving her a brief opening. Her leg struck out. It missed the golden spot, but it did hit his knee. That was almost as good. He stumbled back as his leg collapsed underneath him and just managed to grab the chair for support. It tried to roll, which didn't help him any. Lyssa didn't need any urging to sprint for the door at that point, except it was blocked. Simon had just entered. For a moment, both Lyssa and I felt relief. A guardian! Guardians were safe! Guardians protected us! The thing was, this guardian worked for Avery, and it soon became clear his services went beyond merely keeping Strigoi away from her. He strode in, and with no hesitation grabbed Lyssa and dragged her harshly back to the window. My direction faltered at that moment. I'd been an okay coach at showing her how to fend off a surly teenage boy. But a guardian? And that surly teenage boy had recovered himself and joined Simon to finish the job. Compel him! It was my last desperate bid. That was Lyssa's strength. Unfortunately, while her earlier drinking had metabolized enough to improve her coordination, it was still affecting her control of spirit. She could touch the power, but not very much of it. Her control was clumsy, too. Nonetheless, her resolve was strong. She drew as much of the spirit as she could, channeling it into compulsion. Nothing happened. Then, I felt that weird tickling in my head. At first, I thought Avery was back on the scene, only rather than someone reaching into me, it was like they reached through me. The power in Lyssa surged, and I realized what had happened. Oksana was still there, somewhere in the background, and she was lending her strength again, channeling it through me and into Lyssa. Simon froze, and it was almost amusing. He twitched slightly, rocking back and forth as he tried to advance on her and finish the lethal task. It was like he was suspended in jello. Lyssa was hesitant to move, for fear of breaking her control. There was also the issue that Reed was not being compelled, but for the moment, he seemed too confused about what was happening to Simon to react.
"You can't just kill me," Lyssa blurted out. "Don't you think people are going to ask questions when they find my body shoved out a window?"
"They won't notice," said Simon stiffly,
Even the words required effort. Not when you're resurrected. And if you can't be, then it was just a tragic accident that befell a troubled girl.
Slowly he began breaking out of her compulsion. Her power, while still there, was weakening a little. There was a leak somewhere, and it was dripping out. I suspected it might be Avery's influence or simply Lissa's mental fatigue. Maybe both. A supreme look of satisfaction crossed Simon's features as he lunged forward, and then he froze again. A blazing gold aura lit up in Lissa's periphery. She glanced over just enough to see Adrian in the doorway. The look on his face was comical, but shocked or not, he'd picked up enough to target Simon. It was Adrian's compulsion holding the guardian in place now. Lissa squirmed away, yet again trying to keep out of that damned window's opening.
"Hold him," Lissa cried.
Adrian grimaced.
"I can't. What the hell? It's like there's someone else there."
"Avery,"
said Lissa, sparing a brief glance at the other girl. Avery's face had gone pale, even for a Maroi. Her breathing was heavy, and her sweating had increased. She was fighting Adrian's compulsion. A few seconds later, Simon broke free yet again. He advanced on Lissa and Adrian, though his movements seemed sluggish.
"Son of a bitch," I thought.
"Now what?"
demanded Lissa. "Reed, go for Reed. Get him out of the picture." Reed had been frozen during the struggle with Simon, watching with fascination. And like those of the Guardian, Reed's actions seemed a little sluggish. Still, he was moving toward Lissa again. Simon had apparently decided Adrian was the immediate threat and was heading that way. Time to see if dividing and conquering would work.
"What about Adrian?"
Lissa asked. "We're going to have to leave him on his own for a minute. Get to Reed. Knock him out."
"What?"
But she advanced on him anyway, moving with a determination that warmed me with pride. His face curled into a snarl. He was frantic and overconfident, though, not thinking clearly and still moving in an ungainly way. Once more, I attempted to teach Lissa without words. I couldn't make her do anything, but I tried to make her feel what it was like to punch someone. How to draw back her arm, curl her fingers in the proper way, build up the strength. After what I'd seen her do earlier, the best I could hope for was a decent approximation of a punch, enough to keep him off her and create further delay. And that's when something truly beautiful happened. Lissa socked him in the nose, and I mean socked. We both heard the impact, heard the nose break. Blood came out. He flew backward, both he and Lissa staring wide-eyed. Never, never would I have thought Lissa capable of something like that. Not sweet, delicate, beautiful Lissa. I wanted to whoop and dance with joy, but this wasn't over yet. "Don't stop. Hit him again. You've got to knock him out."
I did,
she cried, horrified at what she'd done. Her fist was also in agonizing pain. I hadn't really mentioned that part during my coaching. "No, you've got to incapacitate him," I told her. "I think he and Avery are bonded, and I think she's taking her strength from him." It made sense now why he'd frozen when Avery drew power to use compulsion, why he'd known to show up when he had. She'd used their bond to summon him. And so Lissa went after Reed again. She got in two more punches, one of which knocked his head against the wall. His lips parted, and his features went slack. He dropped to the floor, eyes staring vacantly. I wasn't sure if he was entirely unconscious, but he was out of this for the moment. Off to the side, I heard a small cry from Avery. Lissa turned to Adrian and Simon. Adrian had ceased any attempts at compulsion because Simon was engaged in a full-on attack. Adrian's face showed he'd taken a few hits of his own, and I figured that, like Lissa, he'd never engaged in this kind of physical combat. Without any need for direction from me, Lissa strode over and turned on her compulsion. Simon jerked in surprise, not stopping his attack, but caught off guard. Lissa was still weak, but the walls around him had dropped a little, just as I'd suspected they would.
"Help me!" cried Lissa.
With the momentary lapse on Simon's part, Adrian tried to wield his spirit too. Lissa felt and saw the change in his aura as the magic flowed through him. She felt him join her in their psychic attack on Simon, and a moment later, I sensed Oksana joining the fray. I wanted to play general and shout orders, but this wasn't my battle anymore.
Simon's eyes went wide, and he fell to his knees. Lyssa could sense the other two spirit users, and was a bit surprised by Oksana's presence, and had the vague impression that they were all doing slightly different things to Simon. Lyssa was trying to compel him to stop his attack, to simply sit still. Her brief brush with Adrian's magic told her he was trying to make the guardian sleep, and Oksana was attempting to get Simon to run out of the room. The conflicting messages and all that power were too much. The last of Simon's defenses fell as all those mixed messages blasted into him, creating a tidal wave of spirit. He collapsed to the floor. With all of their magic combined, the spirit users had knocked him unconscious. Lyssa and Adrian turned to Avery, bracing themselves, but there was no need. As soon as all that spirit had blasted into Simon, Avery had begun screaming, and screaming, and screaming. She gripped the sides of her head, the sound of her voice horrible and grating. Lyssa and Adrian exchanged glances, unsure how to handle this new development.
"For God's sake," gasped Adrian, exhausted. "How do we shut her up?"
Lyssa didn't know. She considered approaching Avery and trying to help her, in spite of all that had happened. But a few seconds later, Avery grew quiet. She didn't pass out like her companions had. She just sat there, staring. Her expression no longer resembled the dazed look she'd had while wielding spirit. It was just blank, like there was nothing in her at all.
"What happened?" asked Lyssa.
I had the answer. The spirit flooded from Simon into her. It fried her. Lyssa was startled.
How could it go from Simon to her?
Because they're bonded.
You said she was bonded to Reed.
She is. She's bonded to both of them. Lyssa had been too distracted while fighting for her life, but I'd been able to notice everyone's auras through her eyes. Avery, no longer masking hers, had possessed a gold one, just like Adrian and Lyssa. Simon and Reed had had nearly identical ones, with ordinary colors, ringed in black. They were shadow-kissed, both having been brought back from the dead by Avery. Lyssa asked no more questions and simply collapsed into Adrian's arms. There was nothing romantic about it, just a desperate need on both their parts to be close to a friend.
"Why did you come?" she asked him.
"Are you kidding? How could I not? You guys were like a bonfire with all the spirit you were wielding. I felt it all the way across campus."
He glanced around.
"Man, I have a lot of questions."
"You and me both," she muttered.
"I have to go," I told Lyssa. I felt a little wistful at having to leave them.
"I miss you. When will you be back?"
"Soon."
"Thank you. Thank you for being there for me."
"Always." I suspected I was smiling back in my own body. "Oh, and Lyssa? Tell Adrian I'm proud of him." The academy room faded. I was once more sitting on a bed halfway around the world. Abe was looking at me with concern. Mark also was concerned, but he had eyes only for Oksana, who lay down beside me. She looked a little like Avery, pale and sweating. Mark clasped her hand frantically, fear all over him.
"Are you okay?"
She smiled.
"Just tired. I'll be all right."
I wanted to hug her.
"Thank you,"
I breathed.
"Thank you so much."
"I'm glad to have helped," she said. "But I hope I don't have to do it again. It was strange. I'm not sure what role I played there."
"Me either." It had been weird. Sometimes it was like Oksana had actually been there, fighting right along with Lyssa and the rest. Other times, I felt as though Oksana had merged with me. I shuddered. Too many minds linked together.
"Next time, you have to be by her side," Oksana said. "In the real world."
I looked down at my hands, confused and unsure what to think. The silver ring gleamed up at me. I took it off and handed it to her. "This ring saved me. Can it heal you, even though you made it?" She held it in her hand for a moment and then gave it back.
"No, but like I said, I'll recover. I heal quickly on my own."
It was true. I'd seen Lyssa heal remarkably fast in the past. It was part of always having spirit in you. I stared at the ring.
and something troubling came to mind. It was a thought that had struck me while riding with the old couple to Novosibirsk, when I'd moved in and out of consciousness. Oksana? Ostrogoy touched this ring. And for a few moments, while he did, it was like, well, he was still Ostrogoy, no question. But while he held it, he was almost like his old self, too. Oksana didn't answer right away. She looked up at Mark, and they held each other's gazes for a long time. He bit his lip and shook his head.
"Don't," he said. "It's a fairy tale."
"What?" I exclaimed. I looked back and forth between them. "If you know something about this, about Strigoi, you have to tell me." Mark spoke sharply in Russian, a warning in his voice. Oksana looked equally determined.
"It's not our place to withhold information," she replied.
She turned to me, face grave.
"Mark told you about the Moroi we met long ago. The other spirit user?"
I nodded. "Yeah?"
"He used to tell a lot of stories, most of which I don't think were true. But one of them, well, he claimed he restored Ostrogoy to life."
Abe, silent thus far, scoffed.
"That is a fairy tale."
"What?" My whole world reeled. "How?"
"I don't know. He never elaborated much, and the details often changed. His mind was going, and I think half of what he said was imaginary," she explained.
"He's crazy," said Mark.
"It wasn't true. Don't get caught up in an insane man's fantasy. Don't fixate on this. Don't let it become your next vigilante quest. You need to go back to your bondmate."
I swallowed, every emotion in the world churning in my stomach. Was it true? Had a spirit user restored Ostrogoy to life? Theoretically, well, if spirit users could heal and bring back the dead, why not the undead? And Dmitri. Dmitri had definitely seemed altered while holding the ring. Had spirit affected him and touched some piece of his old self? At the time, I just assumed it was fond memories of his family affecting him. "I need to talk to this guy," I murmured. Not that I knew why, fairy tale or not, it was too late. I'd done it. I'd killed Dmitri. Nothing would bring him back now. No miracle of spirit. My heart rate increased, and I could hardly breathe. In my mind's eye, I saw him falling, falling, falling forever with the stake in his chest. Would he have said he loved me? I would ask myself that for the rest of my life. Agony and grief flooded me, though at the same time, relief was there too. I had freed Dmitri from a state of evil. I had brought him peace, sending him on to happiness. Maybe he and Mason were together in heaven somewhere, practicing some guardian moves. I had done the right thing. There should be no regret here. Oblivious to my emotions, Oksana addressed my last statement.
"Mark wasn't kidding. This man is crazy. If he's even still alive. The last time we saw him, he could barely hold up a conversation or even use his magic. He ran off into hiding. No one knows where he is. Except maybe his brother."
"Enough," warned Mark.
Abe's attention was piqued, however. He leaned forward, shrewd as ever.
"What's this man's name?"
"Robert Derue,"
said Mark after a few hesitant moments. It was no one I knew, and I realized how pointless this all was. This guy was a lost cause, and had likely imagined the whole idea of saving Ostrogoy in a fit of insanity. Dmitri was gone. This part of my life was over. I needed to get back. Then I noticed that Abe had gone very still. "Do you know him?" I asked.
"No." "Do you?"
"No." I scrutinized Abe's face. "You sure look like you know some things, May."
"I know of him," Abe clarified. "He's an illegitimate royal. His father had an affair, and Robert was the result. His father actually included him as part of the family. Robert and his half-brother grew quite close, though few knew about it."
Of course Abe would know about it, though.
Daru is Robert's mother's last name.
No surprise. Daru wasn't a royal name. What's his father's last name?
Dashkov. Trenton Dashkov.
That, I told him, is a name I know. I had met Trenton Dashkov years ago while accompanying Lissa and her family to a royal holiday party. Trenton had been an old, stooped man then, kind, but on the brink of death. Maroi often lived to be over 100, but he'd been pushing 120, which was ancient even by their standards. There had been no sign or whisper of him having an illegitimate son, but Trenton's legitimate son had been there. That son had even danced with me, showing a great courtesy to a lowly Dampier girl. "Trenton is Victor Dashkov's father," I said. "You're saying Robert Daru is Victor Dashkov's half-brother?" Abe nodded, still watching me closely. Abe, as I'd noted, knew everything. He likely knew my history with Victor. Oksana frowned.
"Victor Dashkov is someone important, isn't he?"
Out in their Siberian cottage, she was removed from the turmoil of Moroi politics, unaware that the man who would have been king had been locked away in prison. I started laughing, but not because I found any humor in the situation. This whole thing was unbelievable, and my hysteria was the only way to let out all the crazy feelings within me. Exasperation, resignation, irony.
"What's so funny?"
asked Mark, startled.
"Nothing,"
I said, knowing if I didn't stop laughing, I'd probably start crying. "That's a thing. It's not funny at all."
What a wonderful twist to my life. The only person alive who might know something about saving Strigoi was the half-brother of my greatest living enemy, Victor Dashkov. And the only person who might know where Robert was Victor himself. Victor had known a lot about Spirit, and now I had a good idea where he'd first learned about it. Not that it mattered. None of this mattered anymore. Victor himself could have been able to convert Strigoi, for all the good it would have done me. Dmitri was dead by my hand. He was gone, saved in the only way I knew how. I'd had to choose between him and Lissa once before, and I'd chosen him. Now there could be no question. I'd chosen her. She was real. She was alive. Dmitri was the past. I'd been staring absentmindedly at the wall, and now I looked up and met Abe squarely in the eyes. "All right, old man," I said. "Pack me up and send me home."
Chapter 29.
The flight was more like 30 hours. Getting from the middle of Siberia to the middle of Montana wasn't easy. I flew from Novosibirsk to Moscow, to Amsterdam, to Seattle, to Missoula. 4 different flights, 5 different airports, a lot of running around. It was exhausting, yet when I handed over my passport to get back into the U.S. in Seattle, I felt a strange surge of emotion in me, joy and relief. Before leaving Russia, I had thought Abe might come back with me and finish his task himself, hand-delivering me to whomever had hired him.
"You really are going back now, aren't you?"
he asked at the airport.
"To the school. You aren't going to get off at one of your stops and disappear."
I smiled. "No, I'm going back to St. Vladimir's."
"And you'll stay there?"
he pressed. He didn't quite look as dangerous as he had in Baia, but I could see a glint of hardness in his eyes. My smile slipped. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a place there anymore.
"Rose!"
I held up a hand to stop him, surprised at my own determination. "Enough. No after-school specials. You said you were hired to get me back there. It isn't your job to say what I do after that." At least I hope not. Whoever wanted me back had to be someone at the academy. I'd be there soon. They had won. Abe's services were no longer required. Despite his victory, he didn't look happy about relinquishing me. Glancing up at one of the departure boards, he sighed.
"You need to go through security, or you'll miss your flight."
I nodded. "Thanks for..." What exactly? His help? "For everything." I started to turn away, but he touched my shoulder.
Is that all you're wearing?
Most of my clothing had been scattered around Russia. One of the other alchemists had located shoes, jeans, and a sweater. But otherwise, I was winging it until I got back to the U.S.
I don't really need anything else, I told him.
Abe arched an eyebrow. Turning to one of his guardians, he made a small gesture toward me. Immediately, the guardian took off his coat and handed it over. The guy was lanky, but the coat was still too big for me.
No, I don't need...
Take it, ordered Abe.
I took it, and then to my further shock, Abe began unwinding the scarf from around his neck. It was one of his nicer ones, too. Cashmere, woven with an array of brilliant colors, more suited to the Caribbean than here or Montana. I started to protest this as well, but the look on his face silenced me. I put the scarf around my neck and thanked him, wondering if I'd ever see him again. I didn't bother asking because I had a feeling he wouldn't tell me anyway. When I finally landed in Missoula 30 hours later, I was pretty sure I didn't want to fly in a plane anytime soon, as in, like, the next 5 years, maybe 10. Without any luggage, getting out of the airport was easy. Abe had sent word ahead of my arrival, but I had no idea who they'd sent to get me. Alberta, who ran the Guardians at St. Vladimir's, seemed a likely choice. Or maybe it would be my mother. I never knew where she was at any given moment, and suddenly, I really, really wanted to see her. She would be a logical choice, too. So it was with some surprise that I saw that the person waiting for me at the airport's exit was Adrian. A grin spread over my face, and I picked up the pace. I threw my arms around him, astonishing both of us. I have never been happier to see you in my life, I said. He squeezed me tightly, and then let me go, regarding me admiringly. The dreams never do justice to real life, little Dompia. You look amazing. I'd cleaned up after the ordeal with the Strigoi, and Oksana had continued healing me in spite of my protests, even the bruises on my neck, which she had never asked about. I didn't want anyone else to know about those. And you look... I studied him. He was dressed as nicely as always, with a 3/4-length wool coat and green scarf that matched his eyes. His dark brown hair had that crafted messiness he liked, but his face... Ah, well. As I'd noted before, Simon had gotten a few good punches on him. One of Adrian's eyes was swollen and ringed with bruises. Nonetheless, thinking about him and everything he'd done, well, none of the flaws mattered. Gorgeous. Laya, he said. Couldn't Lyssa have healed that black eye away? It's a badge of honor. Makes me seem manly. Come on, your carriage awaits. Why'd they send you? I asked as we walked toward the parking lot. You are sober, aren't you? Adrian didn't dignify that with an answer. Well, the school has no official responsibility to you, seeing as you're a dropout and everything. So they weren't really obligated to come get you. None of your other friends can leave campus. But me? I'm just a free spirit, hanging out, so I borrowed a car and here I am. His words sparked mixed reactions in me. I was touched that he'd taken the trouble to come out here, but was bothered by the part about the school having no responsibility to me. Throughout all my travels, I'd gone back and forth in thinking of St. Vladimir's as home. Yet, in the most technical terms, it truly wasn't anymore. I would just be a visitor. As we settled into the drive, Adrian caught me up on the aftermath at the school. After the big psychic showdown, I hadn't delved much into Lyssa's mind. Oksana had healed my body, but mentally, I was still exhausted and grieving. Even though I'd accomplished what I set out to do, that image of Dimitri falling and falling still haunted me.
It turns out you were right about Avery bonding Simon and Reed, Adrian said. From what information we could gather, it sounds like Simon was killed in a fight that Avery witnessed years ago. Everyone thought it was a miracle he survived, not actually realizing the truth.
She kept her powers hidden like the rest of you, I mused. And then Reed died later?
Well, that's the weird thing, said Adrian, frowning. No one can really tell when he died. I mean, he's royal. He's been pampered his whole life, right? but based on what we could get out of him, which wasn't much, since they're all pretty messed up now, it sounds like Avery may have intentionally killed him and then brought him back.
Just like with Lyssa, I said, recalling Simon's words during the fight. Avery wanted to kill her, bring her back, and bond her. But why Lyssa, of all people?
My guess? Because she's a spirit user. Now that spirit's not a secret anymore. It was only a matter of time before Avery heard about Lyssa and me. I think Avery thought bonding Lyssa would increase her own power. As it was, she was sucking up a lot of energy from those other two.
Adrian shook his head.
I wasn't kidding about sensing that spirit all the way across campus. The amounts Avery had to wield to compel so many people. Mass Carrara, and who knows what else. Well, it was staggering.
I stared off at the freeway ahead of us, considering the consequences of Avery's actions. And that's why Reed was so messed up, why he was so angry and ready for a fight. He and Simon were absorbing all that darkness she was producing by using spirit, just like I do with Lyssa.
Yeah, except you are nothing like these guys. It wasn't so obvious with Simon. He was better at keeping a straight face, but both of them were totally on the edge. And now? They're over the edge. All three of them are.
I recalled Simon staring at nothing and Avery screaming. I shivered. When you say over the edge...
I mean totally and completely insane. Those three are going to be institutionalized for the rest of their lives.
From what you... we all did? I asked, aghast.
Partly, he agreed. Avery was throwing all that power at us, and when we threw it back and then some... Well, I think it was like an overload to their minds. And to be honest, considering how Reed and Simon already were, the stage was probably set for this. With Avery, too.
Mark was right, I murmured.
Who?
The other shadow-kissed guy I met. He was talking about how Lyssa and I might be able to heal the darkness away from each other someday. It takes a careful balance of power between the spirit user and the shadow-kissed. I still don't fully get it, but I'm guessing Avery's little circle of three wouldn't have been able to handle that kind of balancing act. I don't think bonding to more than one person is healthy.
Huh.
Adrian didn't say anything for a while, and simply pondered all this. Finally, he laughed.
Man, I can't believe you found another spirit user and shadow-kissed person. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. But that kind of thing always happens to you. I can't wait to hear the rest of what you've been doing.
I looked away and rested my cheek against the glass. It's actually not very interesting. None of the Academy officials knew about my role in the showdown with Avery, so it wasn't like anyone questioned me when we got back. They were still doing cleanup and asking Adrian and Lyssa a lot of questions. Spirit was still such a new phenomenon that no one knew what to think of what had happened. Avery and her bondmates had been taken away for help, and her father had already gone on a temporary leave of absence. Adrian signed me in as his guest, which got me a campus pass. Like all visitors, I was also given a list of where I'd stay and what I could and couldn't do. I promptly ignored it. I have to go, I told Adrian immediately. He gave me a knowing smile.
I figured.
Thank you for coming to get me. I'm sorry I've got to leave you. He waved off my worries.
You aren't leaving me. You're back.
That's what counts. I've been patient this long. I can hold out a little longer. I held his eyes for a moment, startled at the warm feelings that suddenly bubbled up within me. I kept them to myself, though, only giving Adrian a quick smile before I set off across campus. I got a lot of strange looks when I went to Lyssa's dorm. It was right after classes had ended, so student traffic was pretty busy with people rushing in or out to get somewhere. Yet, when I passed by, silence fell and people stopped moving and talking. It reminded me of when Lyssa and I had been returned to school after running away. We'd been marched through the cafeteria and had received similar treatment from our peers. Maybe it was just my imagination, but it seemed worse this time. The looks more shocked, the silence heavier.
Last time, I think people had believed we'd run off as some sort of prank. This time, no one really knew why I'd left. I'd come out of the school's attack a hero, only to drop out and disappear. I think some of Lissa's dorm mates thought they were seeing a ghost. Ignoring the gossip and opinions of others was something I had a lot of practice with, and I sprinted past the onlookers without a backward glance, taking the stairs two at a time. I shut myself off to Lissa's feelings as I walked down her hall. It seemed silly, but I wanted to be surprised. I just wanted to open my eyes and see her in person, with no warnings as to how she was feeling or what she was thinking. I knocked on the door. Adrian had said seeing me in dreams couldn't compare to seeing me in person. The same was true with Lissa. Being in her head was nothing like being near her in reality. The door opened, and it was like an apparition materializing before me. Some sort of heavenly messenger descended from above. I'd never been away from her for this long, and after all this time, part of me wondered if I was imagining this. Her hand went to her mouth, and she stared at me wide-eyed. I think she felt the same way, and she hadn't even had warning of my visit. She'd just been told I was coming, soon. No doubt I seemed like a phantom to her, too. And with that reunion, it was like I was emerging from a cave, one I'd been in for almost 5 weeks, into the bright light of day. When Dimitri had turned, I'd felt like I'd lost part of my soul. When I'd left Lissa, another piece had gone. Now seeing her, I began to think maybe my soul might be able to heal. Maybe I could go on after all. I didn't feel 100% whole yet, but her presence filled up that missing part of me. I felt more like myself than I had in ages. A world of questions and confusion hung in the silence between us. In spite of everything we'd been through with Avery, there was still a lot of unresolved business from when I had first left the school. For the first time since I'd set foot on the academy's grounds, I felt afraid. Afraid that Lissa would reject me or scream at me for what I'd done. Instead, she drew me into a giant hug. "I knew it," she said. She was already choking on her sobs. "I knew you'd come back." "Of course," I murmured into her shoulder. "I said I would." My best friend. I had my best friend back. If I had her, I could recover from what had happened in Siberia. I could go on with my life. "I'm sorry," she said. "So sorry for what I did." I pulled away in surprise. Stepping into the room, I shut the door behind us. "Sorry? What do you have to be sorry for?" Despite my joy at seeing her, I'd come here expecting her to still be angry at me for leaving. None of that mess with Avery would have happened if I'd stayed around. I blamed myself. She sat down on her bed, eyes wet. "For what I said, when you left, I had no right to say the things I did. I have no right to control you, and I feel horrible because..." She ran a hand over her eyes, trying to dry the worst of the tears. "I feel horrible because I told you I wouldn't bring back Dimitri. I mean, I know it didn't matter, but I should have still offered to..."
"No, no!"
I sank down in front of her and grabbed her hands, still awed to be with her again. "Look at me. You have nothing to be sorry for. I said things I shouldn't have too. It happens when people are upset. Neither of us should beat ourselves up over it. And as for bringing him back..." I sighed. "You did the right thing in refusing. Even if we had found him before he'd been turned, it wouldn't have mattered. You can't safely bond more than one person. That's what went wrong with Avery." "Well, that was part of what had gone wrong with Avery. Manipulation and abuse of power had played a huge role, too." Lissa's sobs quieted.
"How did you do that, Rose? How were you there at the end when I needed you? How did you know?"
"I was with another spirit user. I met her in Siberia. She can actively reach into people's minds, anyone's, not just those she's bonded to, and communicate. Like Avery could, actually. Oksana reached into me while I connected to you. It's really strange how it all went down, to say the least."
"Another power I don't have," said Lissa ruefully.
I grinned.
Hey, I have yet to meet any spirit user who can throw a punch like you can. That was poetry in motion, Liss. She groaned, but I sensed her pleasure at my use of the old nickname.
I hope I don't ever have to do that again. I'm not meant to be a fighter, Rose. You're the one who charges out there. I'm the one who waits with moral support and post-battle healing.
She held up her hands and looked at them.
Ugh, no. I definitely don't want to do any more hitting or punching.
But at least now you know you can. If you ever want to practice.
No, she laughed. I've got too many things to practice with Adrian now. Especially after you keep telling me about more and more things that everyone else can do with spirit.
Fine. Maybe it's best if things go back to how they were. Her face sobered.
God, I hope so. Rose, I did so many stupid things while Avery was around.
Through the bond, I felt her greatest regret. Christian. Her heart ached for him, and she'd shed a lot of tears. After having Dimitri ripped away from me, I knew how it felt to lose that kind of love, and I swore to myself that I'd do something to help her. But now wasn't the time. She and I need to reconnect first.
You couldn't help it, though, I pointed out. She was too strong with her compulsion, especially when she got you to drink and killed your defenses.
Yeah, but not everyone knows that or will understand it.
They'll forget, I said. They always do.
I understood her angst over her reputation, but I doubted there would be any truly permanent damage, aside from Christian. Adrian and I had analyzed Avery's manipulation and figured things out once we'd paired it with Simon's comment about Lissa having an unfortunate accident. Avery had wanted to make Lissa look unstable in the event Avery somehow didn't have the strength to resurrect her. If Lissa actually died, no one would investigate much. After weeks of crazy drunken behavior, her losing control and accidentally falling out of a window would be tragic, but not completely out of the realm of possibility.
Spirit's a pain in the ass, Lissa declared. Everyone wants to take advantage of you, non-users like Victor and users like Avery. I swear, I'd go back on my medication if I wasn't paranoid now about protecting myself from other Avery-type people. Why'd she want to kill me and not Adrian? Why am I always the target?
I couldn't help a smile in spite of the grim topic.
Because she wanted you for a minion and him for a boyfriend. She probably wanted a guy who could help escalate her rise in society and couldn't risk killing him in a bonding attempt. Or, who knows, maybe she would have eventually tried him too.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if she felt threatened by you and wanted to make sure she had the only other known female spirit user under her control. Face it, Liss, we could spend hours trying to figure out how Avery Lazar thinks and get nowhere.
True, true. She slid off the bed and sat next to me on the floor. But you know what? I feel like we could talk about anything for hours. You've been here 10 minutes and it's like, well, it's like you never left.
Yeah, I agreed.
Before he was a Strigoi, being with Dimitri had always felt natural and right. Being with Lissa also felt natural and right, though it was a different kind of rightness. In my grief over Dimitri, I'd nearly forgotten what I had with her. They were two sides of me. In that uncanny way she had of guessing thoughts, Lissa said, I meant what I said earlier. I'm sorry for what I said, about acting like I have some right to dictate your life. I don't. If you decide to stay or guard me, you do that by your choice and your kindness. I want to make sure you live and choose your own life.
There's nothing kind about it. I've always wanted to protect you.
I still do. I sighed. I just had things to take care of. I had to get myself together, and I'm sorry I didn't handle it with you very well. There was a lot of apologizing going on, but I realized that was how it was with people you cared about. You forgave each other and moved on.
Lissa hesitated before asking her next question, but I'd known it was coming.
So, what happened? Did you find him? At first, I didn't think I wanted to talk about it, but then I realized that I needed to. And the thing was, a few different things had gone wrong with Lissa and me before.
One had been that she'd taken me for granted. The other had been that I wouldn't tell her the truth, and then I'd resent her for it later. If we were going to patch up this friendship and forgive each other, we had to make sure we didn't repeat the past.
I did find him, I said at last.
And I launched into the story, telling her everything that had happened to me. My travels, the Belikovs, the alchemists, Oksana and Mark, the Unpromised, and of course, Dmitri. Just as Lissa had joked earlier, we talked for hours. I poured out my heart to her, and she listened without judgment. Her face was compassionate the whole time, and when I reached the end, I was sobbing. All the love and rage and anguish I'd been holding onto since that night on the bridge exploding out of me. I hadn't told anyone else in Novosibirsk exactly where I'd been during my time with Dmitri. I hadn't dared tell anyone I'd been a blood whore for a Strigoi. I had stayed vague, hoping if I didn't talk about it, then maybe it wouldn't be real. Now, with Lissa, I had to accept the reality of everything and truly feel it. I had killed the man I loved. A knock at the door jolted us out of a world that contained only her and me. I glanced at the clock and was startled to see it was almost curfew time. I wondered if I was being thrown out, but when Lissa opened the door, after I'd hastily dried my eyes, the waiting dorm worker had a message of a different sort.
Alberta wants to see you, the woman told me. She thought you might be here.
Lissa and I exchanged glances.
When?
Now? I asked. The woman shrugged.
From the way she sounded, yeah, I'd say now, or sooner.
She shut the door. Alberta was the captain of the Guardians on campus, and when she spoke, people acted.
I wonder what this is about, asked Lissa.
I stood up, hating to leave.
Any number of things, I imagine. I'll go see her and then head back to guest housing.
Not that I'll sleep. I have no clue what time zone I'm in anymore.
Lissa gave me a parting hug, one we both had a hard time letting go of. Good luck.
I started to turn the door's handle and then thought of something. I slipped the silver ring off of my finger and handed it to Lissa.
Is this the ring you... Oh!
She wrapped her hand around it, her face growing enraptured.
Can you feel the magic in it? I asked.
Yeah, it's weak, but it's in there. She held the ring up to the light and stared at it. She probably wasn't going to notice when I left, because I had a feeling she'd be studying the ring all night.
It's so strange. I can almost immediately feel how she did this.
Mark said we probably had a while to go before we could do the healing they do. But maybe you could figure out how to make charms while we wait. Her jade green eyes were still on the ring.
Yeah, I think I might.
I smiled at her excitement and tried to leave again, but she caught my arm.
Hey, Rose, I know I'll see you tomorrow, but...
But what?
I just wanted to say, after everything that's happened, well... I don't want us to ever have this kind of separation again. I mean, I know we can't be together every single second, and that's kind of creepy anyway. But we're bonded for a reason. We're meant to look out for each other and be there for each other.
Her words sent a shiver through me, like we were wrapped in powers greater than ourselves.
We will be. No, I mean, you're always there for me, every time I'm in danger, and you come rushing in to save me. Not anymore.
You don't want me to save you anymore?
That's not what I meant. I want to be there for you too, Rose. If I can throw a punch, I can do anything.
Even though that really hurt. She exhaled in frustration.
God, I'm not making any sense. Look, the point is, if you ever have to go off alone, take me with you. Don't leave me behind.
Liss,
I'm serious.
Her luminous beauty burned with determination and purpose.
Whatever obstacles you have to go against, I'm going to be there for you. Don't go alone.
Swear to me that if you ever decide to take off again, you'll bring me.
We'll do it together.
I started to protest as a million fears came to my mind. How could I risk her life? Yet looking at her, I knew she was right. For better or worse, we had a bond we couldn't escape. Lissa was indeed tied to that piece of my soul, and we were stronger fighting together than apart.
Okay, I said, clasping her hand. I swear it. The next time I go do something stupid that might get me killed, you can come along.
Chapter 30 Alberta was waiting for me in the front office of the Guardian's administrative building. Alberta's role as captain here was remarkable considering the lower numbers of women in our ranks. She was in her 50s and one of the toughest women I'd met. Her sandy hair was showing some gray, and years of working outdoors had weathered her skin.
"Welcome back, Rose," she said, standing up at my approach.
She certainly didn't hug me, and her manner was businesslike. But the fact that she used my first name was a generous gesture for her. That, and I thought I saw a small spark of relief and happiness in her eyes.
"Let's go to my office."
I'd never been there. Any disciplinary issues I had with the Guardians were usually addressed in committee. Unsurprisingly, the office was spotless, everything arranged with military efficiency. We sat on opposite sides of her desk, and I braced myself for an interrogation.
"Rose," she said, leaning toward me, "I'm going to be blunt with you. I'm not going to give you lectures or demand any explanations. Honestly, since you aren't my student anymore, I don't have the right to ask or tell you anything."
It was like what Adrian had said. "You can lecture," I told her. "I've always respected you and want to hear what you have to say." The ghost of a smile flashed on her face.
"All right, here it is. You screwed up." "Wow, you weren't kidding about bluntness." "The reasons don't matter. You shouldn't have left. You shouldn't have dropped out. Your education and training are too valuable, no matter how much you think you know. And you are too talented to risk throwing away your future."
I almost laughed. "To tell you the truth, I'm not sure what my future is anymore."
"Which is why you need to graduate."
"But I dropped out," she snorted.
"Then drop back in."
What? How?
"With paperwork, just like everything else in the world."
To be honest, I hadn't known what I'd do once I got back here. My immediate concern was Lissa, to be with her and make sure she was okay. I knew I couldn't officially be her guardian anymore, but I'd figured once we were together, no one could stop her from hanging out with a friend. I'd be her hired bodyguard, so to speak, kind of like what Abe had. And in the meantime, I'd bum around campus like Adrian. But to enroll again? I missed a month, maybe more. My days were scattered. It was the first week of May, and I'd left near the end of March, on my birthday. What was that, 5 weeks? Almost six?
"You missed 2 years and managed to catch up. I have faith in you. And even if you have trouble, graduating with low grades is better than not graduating at all."
I tried to imagine myself back in this world. Had it really only been a little over a month? Classes, day-to-day intrigue. How could I just go back to that? How could I return to that life after seeing the way Dimitri's family lived? After being with Dimitri and losing him again? Would he have said he loved me? "I don't know what to say," I told Alberta. "This is kind of a lot to take in."
"Well, you should decide quickly. The sooner you're back in class, the better."
"They'll really let me?" That was the part I found a little unbelievable.
"I'll let you," she said. "No way am I letting someone like you get away. And now that Lazar is gone, well, things are crazy around here. No one's going to give me much trouble in filing the paperwork."
Her wry smile slipped a little.
"And if they do give us any trouble, I've been made to understand that you have a benefactor who can pull a few favors to smooth everything over."
"A benefactor?" I repeated flatly. "A benefactor who wears flashy scarves and gold jewelry?" She shrugged.
"No one I know. Don't even know his name. Only that he'll threaten to withhold a considerable donation to the school if you aren't let back in. If you want in."
"Yeah, deals and blackmail. I was pretty sure I knew who my benefactor was. Give me some time to think about it. I'll decide soon," I promise. She frowned, thoughtful, and then gave a sharp nod.
All right.
We both stood up, and she walked me toward the building's entrance. I glanced over at her.
Hey, if I do graduate, do you think there's ever any way I could be in line to be Lissa's guardian officially again? I know they've already picked out people for her, and that I'm in, a bit of disgrace.
We stopped by the outer doors, and Alberta rested a hand on her hip.
I don't know. We can certainly try. The situation's gotten a lot more complicated.
Yeah, I know, I said sadly, recalling Tatiana's high-handed actions.
But, like I said, we'll do what we can. What I said about graduating with low grades? You won't. Well, maybe in math and science, but that's out of my control. You'll be the best among the novices, though. I'll work with you myself.
Okay, I said, realizing what a concession that was on her part. Thank you. I had just stepped outside when she called my name.
Rose?
I caught the door and glanced back. Yeah? Alberta's face was gentle, something I'd never seen before.
I'm sorry, she said. Sorry for everything that happened, and that none of us could do anything about it.
I saw in her eyes that she knew about Dimitri and me. I wasn't sure how. Maybe she'd heard it after the battle. Maybe she'd guessed beforehand. Regardless, there was no chastisement in her face, only sincere sorrow and empathy. I gave her a brief nod of acknowledgement and went outside. I found Christian the next day, but our conversation was brief. He was on his way to meet with some of his trainees and was running late. But he hugged me and seemed genuinely happy to have me back. It showed how far we'd come, considering the antagonistic relationship we'd had when we first met.
About time, he said. Lissa and Adrian get the market share on worrying about you, but they're not the only ones. And someone needs to put Adrian in his place, you know? I can't do it all the time.
Thanks. Kills me to say this, but I missed you too. No one's sarcasm compares to yours in Russia. My amusement faded. But since you mentioned Lissa...
No.
He held up his hand by way of protest, face hardening.
I knew you were going to go there.
Christian, she loves you. You know that what happened wasn't her fault.
I know that, he interrupted. But it doesn't mean it didn't hurt. Rose, I know it's in your nature to rush in and say what everyone else is afraid to. But please, not this time. I need time to figure things out.
I had to bite back a lot of comments. Lissa had mentioned Christian in our talk yesterday. What had happened between them was one of her biggest regrets. Probably the thing she hated Avery the most for. Lissa wanted to approach him and make up, but he'd kept his distance. And yes, he was right. It wasn't my place to rush in yet. But I did need them to fix this. So I respected his wishes and simply nodded. Okay. For now. My last words made his smile twist a little.
Thanks. Look, I've got to head off. If you ever want to show these kids how to kick ass the old-fashioned way, come by sometime. Jill would pass out if she saw you again.
I told him I would, and let him go on his way, seeing as I had places to be. No way was I finished with him, though. I had a dinner date with Adrian and Lissa, up in one of the lounges in guest housing. Talking to Christian had made me late, and I hurried through the building's lobby, barely taking note of my surroundings.
Always in a rush, a voice said. It's a wonder anyone can get you to stop moving.
I came to a halt and turned, my eyes wide.
Mom!
She stood leaning against the wall, arms crossed, with her cropped auburn hair as curly and messy as ever. Her face, weathered like Alberta's from being out in the elements, was filled with relief and love. There was no anger, no condemnation. I had never been so happy to see her in my life. I was in her arms in an instant, resting my head on her chest even though she was shorter than me.
Rose, Rose, she said into my hair, don't ever do this again, please.
I pulled back and looked at her face, astonished to see tears spilling from her eyes. I had seen my mother tear up in the wake of the attack on the school, but never,
Never had I seen her outright cry. Certainly not over me. It made me want to cry too, and I uselessly tried to dry her face with Abe's scarf.
No, no, it's okay, don't cry, I said, taking on an odd role reversal. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I missed you so much.
It was true. I loved Olena Belikova. I thought she was kind and wonderful and would cherish the memories of her comforting me about Dmitri and always going out of her way to feed me. In another life, she could have been my mother-in-law. In this one, I would always regard her as a kind of foster mother. But she wasn't my real mother. Janine Hathaway was. And standing there with her, I was happy, so, so happy that I was her daughter. She wasn't perfect, but no one was, as I was learning. She was, however, good and brave and fierce and compassionate, and I think she understood me more than I realized sometimes. If I could be half the woman she was, my life would be well spent.
I was so worried, she told me, recovering herself.
Where did you go? I mean, I know now you were in Russia, but why?
I thought... I swallowed and again saw Dmitri with my stake in his chest. Well, there was something I had to do. I thought I had to do it on my own.
I wasn't sure about that last part now. True, I had accomplished my goal on my own, but I was realizing now how many people loved me and were with me. Who knew how differently things might have turned out if I'd asked for help? Maybe it would have been easier.
I have a lot of questions, she warned. Her voice had toughened, and I smiled in spite of myself. Now she was back to the Janine Hathaway I knew, and I loved her for it. Her eyes flitted to my face and then to my neck, and I saw her stiffen. For a panicked moment, I wondered if Oksana had missed healing one of the bite marks. The thought of my mother seeing what I'd lowered myself to in Siberia made my heart stop. Instead, she reached out and touched the bright colors of the cashmere scarf, her face filled with wonder as much as shock.
This is Ibrahim's scarf. It's a family heirloom.
No, it belongs to this mobster guy named Abe.
I stopped as soon as the name crossed my lips.
Abe?
Ibrahim. Hearing them both out loud made me realize how similar they were.
Abe. Abe was short for Abraham in English. Abraham, Ibrahim. There was only a slight variation in the vowels. Abraham was a common enough name in the U.S., but I'd heard Ibrahim only once before, spoken in scorn by Queen Tatiana when referring to someone my mother had been involved with.
Mom? I said disbelievingly. You know Abe?
She was still touching the scarf, eyes filled with emotion once more, but a different kind than she'd had for me.
Yes, Rose. I know him.
Please don't tell me...
Oh, man. Why couldn't I have been an illegitimate half-royal like Robert DeRue, or even the mailman's daughter?
Please don't tell me Abe is my father.
She didn't have to tell me. It was all over her face, her expression dreamily recalling some other time and place. Some time and place that had undoubtedly involved my conception.
Ugh. Oh, God, I said. I'm Zmei's daughter. Zmei Jr. Zmeyette, even.
That got her attention. She looked up at me.
What on earth are you talking about?
Nothing, I said. I was stunned, trying desperately to assimilate this new piece of data into my worldview. I summoned a picture of that sly, bearded face, trying to hunt down family resemblance. Everyone said my facial features were like my mom's when she was younger. But my coloring, the dark hair and eyes... Yes, that was the same as Abe's. I'd always known my father was Turkish. That was Abe's mystery accent, the one not Russian, but still foreign to my ears. Ibrahim must be the Turkish version of Abraham.
How?
I asked.
How in the world did you get involved with someone like that?
She looked offended.
Ibrahim is a wonderful man. You don't know him like I do.
Obviously. I hesitated. Mom, You must know. What is it that Abe does for a living?
He's a businessman, and he knows and does favors for a lot of people, which is why he has the influence he does.
But what kind of business? I've heard it's illegal. It's not... Oh, God. Please tell me he isn't selling blood whores or something.
What?
She looked shocked. No, of course not.
But he is doing illegal things.
Who's to say? He's never actually been caught for anything illegal.
I swear, you almost sounded like you were trying to make a joke.
I never would have expected her to defend a criminal, but I knew better than most how love could drive us to crazy acts.
If he wants to tell you, he'll tell you. End of story, Rose. Besides, you certainly keep your share of secrets, too. You two have a lot in common.
Are you kidding? He's arrogant, sarcastic, likes to intimidate people, and... Oh.
Okay. Maybe she had a point.
A small half-smile played upon her lips.
I never really expected you to meet this way. I never expected you to meet, period. We both thought it'd be best if he wasn't in your life.
A new thought occurred to me. It was you, wasn't it? You hired him to find me.
What? I contacted him when you went missing, but I certainly didn't hire him.
Then who did? I wondered. He said he was working for someone. Her love-struck, reminiscent smile turned wry.
Rose, Ibrahim Mazur doesn't work for anyone. He's not the kind of person you can hire.
But he said... Wait, why was he following me?
Are you saying he was lying?
Well, she admitted.
It wouldn't be the first time. If he was following you, it wasn't because anyone was making him or paying him. He did it because he wanted to. He wanted to find you and make sure you were okay. He made sure all his contacts knew to look out for you.
I replayed my brief history with Abe. Shadowy, taunting, infuriating. But he'd driven out into the night to get me when I'd been attacked, been adamant in his goal to get me back to school and safety, and had apparently gifted me with an heirloom because he thought I'd get cold on my way home. He's a wonderful man, my mother had said. I suppose there were worse fathers to have.
Rose, there you are. What's taking so long?
My mom and I turned as Lissa entered the lobby, her face lighting up when she saw me.
Come on, both of you. The food's going to get cold, and you won't believe what Adrian got.
My mom and I exchanged a quick look, neither of us needing to speak. We had a long conversation ahead of us, but it would have to wait. I have no idea how Adrian had arranged it, but when we got to the lounge, there was Chinese food set up. The Academy almost never served it. And even then, it just never tasted... right. But this was the good stuff. Bowls and bowls of sweet and sour chicken and egg foo young. In a corner garbage can, I saw some restaurant takeout cartons with an address in Missoula printed on the side.
How the hell did you get that here?
I demanded. Not only that, it was still warm.
Don't question these things, Rose, said Adrian, loading up his plate with pork fried rice. He seemed very pleased with himself. Just roll with it. Once Alberta gets your paperwork settled, we'll eat like this every day.
I stopped mid-bite.
How do you know about that?
He merely winked.
When you have nothing to do but hang out on campus all the time, you kind of pick things up.
Lissa glanced between the two of us. She'd been in class all day, and we hadn't had much time to talk.
What's this?
Alberta wants me to enroll again and graduate, I explained. Lissa nearly dropped her plate.
Then do it!
My mother looked equally startled.
She'll let you?
That's what she told me, I said.
Then do it,
my mother exclaimed.
You know, mused Adrian, I kind of like the idea of us going on the road together.
Whatever, I shot back. You probably wouldn't let me drive.
Stop this.
My mother was firmly back to her old self, no grief over her daughter's departure or wistfulness for a lost lover.
You need to take this seriously. Your future's at stake.
She nodded toward Lissa.
Her future's at stake. Finishing your education here and going on to be a guardian is the...
Yes, I said.
Yes?
she asked, puzzled. I smiled. Yes, I agree.
You agree? With me?
I don't think my mom could ever recall that happening. Neither could I, for that matter. Yep, I'll take the trials, graduate, and become as respectable a member of society as I can. Not that it sounds like much fun, I teased. I kept my tone light, but inside, I knew I needed this. I needed to be back with people who loved me. I needed a new purpose, or else I would never get over Dimitri. I would never stop seeing his face or hearing his voice. Beside me, Lissa gasped and clasped her hands together. Her joy flooded into me. Adrian didn't wear his emotions as openly, but I could see he too was pleased at having me around. My mom still looked kind of stunned. I think she was used to me being unreasonable, which usually I was.
You'll really stay? She asked. Good God, I laughed. How many times do I have to say it?
Yes, I'll go back to school.
And stay? She prompted. The full 2.5 months?
Isn't that implied?
Her face was hard and very mom-like.
I want to know for sure you aren't going to up and run away again. You'll stay and finish school no matter what? Stay until you graduate? Do you promise?
I met her eyes, surprised at her intensity.
Yes. Yes. I promise.
Excellent, she said. You'll be glad you did this down the road.
Her words were guardian formal, but in her eyes, I saw love and joy. We finished dinner and helped stack dishes for the building's cleaning service. While scraping uneaten food into a trash can, I felt Adrian beside me.
This is very domestic of you, he said. It's kind of hot, really. Giving me all sorts of fantasies about you in an apron vacuuming my house.
Oh, Adrian, how I've missed you, I said with an eye roll.
I don't suppose you're helping. Nah, I helped when I ate everything on my plate. No mess that way.
He paused.
And yes, you're welcome.
I laughed. You know, it's a good thing you didn't say much when I promised Mom I'd stay here. I might have decided otherwise.
Not sure if you could have stood up to her. Your mom seems like someone who gets her way a lot.
He cast a covert look to where Lissa and my mom stood talking across the room. He lowered his voice. It must run in the family.
In fact, maybe I should get her help on something.
Getting a hold of illegal cigarettes?
Asking her daughter out.
I nearly dropped the plate I held.
You've asked me out tons of times.
Not really. I've made inappropriate suggestions and frequently pushed for nudity, but I've never asked you out on a real date. And if memory serves, you did say you'd give me a fair chance once I let you clean up my trust fund.
I didn't clean it out, I scoffed. But standing there, looking at him, I remembered that I had said that if I survived my quest for Dimitri, I'd give Adrian a shot. I would have said anything to get the money I needed then, but now I saw Adrian through new eyes. I wasn't ready to marry him by any stretch of the imagination, nor did I fully consider him reliable boyfriend material. I didn't even know if I wanted a boyfriend ever. But he had been a good friend to me and everyone else throughout all of this chaos. He'd been kind and steady, and yeah, I couldn't deny it. Even with a fading black eye, he was still extraordinarily handsome. And while it shouldn't have mattered, Lissa had gotten it out from him that a lot of his infatuation with Avery had been compulsion-induced. He'd liked her and had been ruling out a romantic attachment, but her powers had cranked up the intensity more than he actually felt. Or so he claimed. If I were a guy and all that had happened to me, I'd probably say I'd been under the influence of magic, too. Yet from the way he looked at me now, I found it hard to believe anyone had taken my place for him in this last month or so. Make me an offer, I said at last. Write it up. Give me a point-by-point outline of why you're a good would-be suitor. He started to laugh, then saw my face.
Seriously? That's like homework. There's a reason I'm not in college.
I snapped my fingers.
Get to it, Ivashkov. I want to see you put in a good day's work.
I expected a joke or a brush off until later. But instead, he said,
Okay.
Okay? Now I felt like my mom had earlier, when I'd quickly agreed with her. Yep, I'm going to go back to my room right now to start drafting my assignment.
I stared incredulously as he reached for his coat. I had never seen Adrian move that fast when any kind of labor was involved. Oh no, what had I gotten myself into?
He suddenly paused and reached into his coat pocket with an exasperated smile.
Actually, I already practically wrote you an essay. Nearly forgot.
He produced a piece of folded paper and waved it in the air.
You have got to get your own phone. I'm not going to be a secretary anymore.
What is that?
Some foreign guide called me earlier, said my number was in his phone's memory.
Again, Adrian eyed Lissa and my mom. They were still in deep conversation.
He said he had a message for you and didn't want me to tell anyone else. He made me write it out and read it back to him. You're the only person I do that for, you know. I think I'm going to mention it when I write up my dating proposal.
Will you just hand it over? He gave me the note with a wink, sketched me a bow, and then said goodbye to Lissa and my mom. I kind of wondered if he really was going to write up a dating proposal. Mostly my attention was on the note. I had no doubt who had called him. I'd used Abe's phone to dial Adrian in Novosibirsk, and had later told Abe about Adrian's financial involvement in my trip. Apparently, my father, ugh, that was still an unreal thought, had decided that made Adrian trustworthy, though I wondered why my mom couldn't have been used as a messenger. I unfolded the note, and it took me a few seconds to decipher Adrian's writing. If he did write me a dating proposal, I really hoped he would type it. The note read, "Sent a message to Robert's brother. He told me there was nothing I could offer that would make him reveal Robert's location, and believe me, I have much to offer. But he said as long as he had to spend the rest of his life in there, then the information would die with him. Thought you'd like to know." It was hardly the essay Adrian had made it out to be. It was also a bit cryptic, but then, Abe wouldn't want its contents easily understandable to Adrian. To me, the meaning was clear. Robert's brother, Victor Dashkov, Abe had a message to Victor, a horrible remote prison he was locked away in. Somehow it didn't surprise me that Abe could pull that off. Abe had no doubt attempted one of his trades with Victor in order to find out where Robert was, but Victor had refused. No surprise there either. Victor wasn't the most helpful of people, and I couldn't entirely blame him now. The guy was locked up for life in there, in prison. What could anyone offer a condemned man that would really make a difference in his life? I sighed and put the note away, somehow touched that Abe had done this for me, as futile as it was. And again, the same argument came to mind. Even if Victor had given up Robert's location, what did it matter? The farther I got from the events in Russia, the more ridiculous it became to even consider turning Estragoy back to his original form. Only true death could free them. Only death. My mom's voice saved me before I could begin reliving the bridge scene once more in my head. She told me she had to leave, but promised we'd talk later. As soon as she was gone, Lissa and I made sure everything was set in the lounge before heading off to my room. She and I still had a lot of talking to do, too. We went upstairs, and I wondered when they'd move me out of guest housing and back to the dorm. Probably whenever Alberta finished with the red tape. It still seemed impossible to accept that I was going to be able to return to my old life and move on from all that had happened in the last month or so.
"Did Adrian give you a love note?" Lissa asked me.
Her voice was teasing, but through the bond, I knew she still worried about me grieving for Dmitri.
"Not yet," I
said. "I'll explain later." Outside my room, one of the building attendants was just about to knock on the door. When she saw me, she held out a thick padded envelope.
"I was just bringing this to you. It arrived in today's mail."
"Thanks," I said. I took it from her and looked at it. My name and St. Vladimir's address were printed in neat writing, which I found odd since my arrival here had been sudden. There was no return address, but it bore Russian postmarks and delivery through Global Overnight Mail.
"Do you know who it's from?"
Lissa asked once the woman was gone. I don't know. I met a lot of people in Russia. It could have been from Elena, Mark, or Sydney. Yet, something I couldn't quite explain set my senses on high alert. I tore open one side and reached in. My hand closed around something cold and metallic. I knew before I even pulled it out what it was. It was a silver stake. Oh, God, I said. I rolled the stake around, running my finger over the engraved geometric pattern at its base. There was no question. One of a kind. This was the stake I'd taken from the vault in Galena's house. The one I'd...
Why would someone send you a stake? Asked Lissa.
I didn't answer, and instead pulled out the envelope's next item. A small note card. There, in handwriting I knew all too well, was... You forgot another lesson. Never turn your back until you know your enemy is dead. Looks like we'll have to go over the lesson again the next time I see you. Which will be soon. Card. This is not good. The world spun for a moment, and I closed my eyes, taking a deep breath. For the 100th time, I ran through the events of the night I escaped from Dimitri. Every other time, my emotions and attention were always on the look on his face when I stabbed him, the sight of his body falling into that black water. Now my mind summoned up the details of the struggle. I recalled how his last-minute dodge had interfered with my shot at his heart. For a moment out there, I hadn't thought I'd gotten the stake in hard enough, until I'd seen his face go slack and watched him fall. But I really hadn't gotten the stake in hard enough. My first instinct had been right, but things had happened too fast. He'd fallen, and then what? Had the stake been loose enough to fall out on its own? Had he been able to pull it out? Had the river's impact knocked it out? All this practice, dummies. All for nothing, I muttered, recalling how Dimitri had drilled me over and over to plunge a stake into the chest so it would get past the ribs and into the heart. Rose, exclaimed Lissa. I had a feeling this wasn't the first time she'd said my name. What's going on? The most important staking of my life. And I had messed up. What would happen now? Looks like we'll have to go over the lesson again the next time I see you, which will be soon. I didn't know what to feel. Despair that I hadn't released Dimitri's soul and fulfilled the promise I'd secretly made to him? Grief that I hadn't killed him I loved? And always, always that question. Would he have said he loved me if we'd had a few moments more? I still had no answers. My emotions were running crazy, and I needed to put them on hold and analyze what I knew here. First, 2.5 months. I'd promised my mom 2.5 months. No action until then. Meanwhile, Dimitri was still out there. Still a Strigoi. As long as he was loose in the world, there would be no peace for me. No closure. Looking at that card again, I realized I would have no peace even if I tried to ignore him. I understood the card's message. Dimitri was coming for me this time, and something told me that I had blown my chance at being turned Strigoi. He was coming to kill me. What had he said when I escaped the manor? That there was no way we could be in the world? Yet, we could. Didn't answer her right away. Lissa's worry grew. Your face is freaking me out a little. What are you thinking? Do you believe in fairy tales? I asked, looking up into her eyes. Even as I said the words, I could imagine Mark's disapproval. What? What kind of tales? The cowards away from life. I don't understand, she said. I'm totally lost. Tell me what's going on. What can I do? 2.5 months. I had to stay here for 2.5 months. It seemed like forever. But I'd promised my mom that I would, and I refused to be rash again, particularly with the stakes so high now. Promises. Drowning in promises. Promises. Did you mean it before? You want to go with me on my next crazy quest?
no matter what?
Yes.
There was no uncertainty or hesitation in the word, no wavering in her steady green eyes. Of course, I wondered if she'd feel the same way later when she found out what it was we were going to do. What could anyone offer a damned man that would really make a difference in his life? Pondering earlier, trying to figure out what could get Victor Dashkoff to talk. Victor had told Abe there was nothing anyone could offer that would make him give up the information about his brother's alleged ability to restore Strigoi. Victor was serving a life sentence. No bribe could matter to him anymore. But one could, I realized. There was only one way to achieve that. We were going to have to put Victor Dashkoff out of prison. But I decided not to mention that to Lissa quite yet. All I knew for now was that I had a fleeting shot at saving Dimitri. Mark had said it was a fairy tale, but I had to take the chance. The question was, how long did I have until Dimitri came to kill me? How long did I have to figure out if the impossible was actually possible? That was the real issue. Because if Dimitri showed up before I had a chance to find the dragon in this story, Victor, things were going to get ugly. Maybe this whole Robert thing was one big lie. But even if it wasn't, well, the clock was ticking. If Dimitri came for me before I could get to Victor and Robert, I'd have to fight him again, no question. I couldn't wait for this magical cure. I have to kill Dimitri this time, and any I might have to bring my prince. Damn. It's a good thing I work well under pressure. This is Emily Schaefer. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Blood Promise, Empire Academy by Michelle Mead. This program was executive produced by Patty Peru and produced and directed by Garrett Scott. Blood Promise is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA Inc. Copyright 2010. All rights reserved. The book Blood Promise is available wherever Razorbill books are sold.